Okay, I'm going to call to order the January 21st meeting of the California Water Commission. Ms. Sims, will you call the roll?
Commissioner Ball?
Present.
Chairman Byrne?
Here.
Commissioner Curtin?
Here.
Commissioner Del Bosque?
Here.
Commissioner Delfino?
Here.
Commissioner Hintz?
Here.
Commissioner Orth?
Here.
Commissioner Quintero?
Here.
Commissioner Saracino?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Great, thank you. Moving on to item number three on the agenda, which is approval of the meeting minutes from November. Have a motion?
So moved.
Commissioner Saracino, seconded by Commissioner Orth. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great, motion passes. Number four, the executive officer's report.
That would be me. First of all, I'd like to introduce a new staff member that we have who started with the commission last week. She's going to be the office technician and will be working closely with all of you on agenda materials and travel and any other administrative support we can provide. Her name is Beth Perkins. She's right there. So if I haven't had a chance to introduce you personally, that you'll get a chance to work with her very soon and very often. Thank you, Beth. Also wanted to mention that in the front of your binder is this month's drought contingency dashboard that we prepare for you. I will mention that despite a rather wet December, we're at about 36% of average for snowpack this year, which is much better than last year, but still not great. And reservoir storage is actually less than it was last year, down about 800,000 acre feet from this time last year. So provide you with that update. I also wanted to mention an item that's not on our agenda today that'll be on the February agenda, and that's the Groundwater Sustainability Act. I think you all know that the commission has some important responsibilities in terms of approving regulations for that program that DWR is working on, and also consideration of requests having to do with basin boundaries that local agencies will bring forward. So Dave Gutierrez, who's running the program for DWR, will be here in February to talk to you about the program. There's also been some discussion about, in order to keep that process going and make sure that the materials and information that gets to the commission is consistent with your policies and your desires, that it might be helpful to have a couple of commission members stay more closely aligned with DWR staff as they're working on this, to provide them with any sort of feedback or to keep this commission apprised of the work that's being done. I have talked with Commission Member Orth about that, and I don't know if you want to add anything at this point to provide.
Well, I think the commission has to think about, you know, management of workload in 2015. I mean, in addition to this very significant storage discussion that we're about to embark on or continue, there are two significant deadlines that are going to involve the commission. One is the regulations involving basin boundary adjustment, and those are due by statute January 1st of 2016. And then the broader regulations that involve how the groundwater sustainability plans will be assessed for compliance with the Act, and those are due June of 2016, June 1st. And there's a lot of interest locally in trying to get early clarification of some of these issues as we work and various water agencies, local agencies work in forming groundwater sustainability agencies and how boundary adjustments are going to process the formation of that. So I think it's, and I've expressed this earlier, it's incumbent upon us to do everything we can to add, you know, expedience and transparency to that process. And I'm looking forward to seeing what DWR staff has to present next month. I think it's an interesting consideration for the commission as to whether or not we have one or two of us involved in working more directly with the staff in between meetings and to create that liaison of communication. And I think it's up to the chair and others here to decide how you want to structure that. But I would encourage considering that kind of a model. So.
Great. I actually think that's a very good idea, and I'm not sure, Ms. King, for the number of people we could have Is it two or three for purposes of a group of folks?
For subcommittees, I know it's less than a quorum, but there are specific rules about that, and I'll look into that.
Okay.
And get you an answer to that before the next meeting.
Yeah, well, I think that would be a great idea, and I also think, given your experience with helping put everything together, Commissioner Orth, you'd be a great person to do that. And if there are others who are interested, Commissioner Saraceno and...
I would suggest you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, maybe we can, why don't we, I could talk with Ms. Sims and Commissioner Saraceno and Orth and also Ms. King and figure out what the appropriate number is. And but if folks are interested, I think that's smart, and given the workload, I think it is intelligent for us to be working in between meetings a lot more than maybe we have been in the past. So, okay, so the next meeting we'll talk about that, and we'll plan to more formally designate a few people. Is that it, Sue?
That's it.
Okay, great. Okay, moving on to item number four on the agenda, number five on the agenda, which is the public comment period. So if there's anyone, member of the public, who would like to speak on any item that is not on the agenda, now would be the time to do that. There will be opportunities to speak to items that are on the agenda at the end of those items as well. Public comment? I think it's probably wait until number seven or number
nine.
Wait until number nine. I'm sorry, yeah. That's probably more appropriate when we'll be talking about that in more detail. Okay? Okay, great. Okay, moving on to item number six on the agenda, which is an action item, which is the election of a chair and a vice chair. And as all of you know, we have done this on an annual basis, and we've had kind of a rotation going. And with that, I will open it up to any discussion.
I would like us to consider just postponing it for a month while we're sort of... There's several members who are waiting for some details on their status, and there are issues being dealt with at the Senate in terms of confirmation questions. I believe there were some of us up for interviews this month, but they postponed it. I'm not sure what that was all about, but I mean, it'd be of some interest to me to give it a month to find out a little bit more about where the status of this commission might be. You know, in 30 days, and this might be useful.
So. Commissioner Dobosky. Gotta push hard, yeah.
Thank you. I agree with Danny. I think that it wouldn't hurt to postpone this for another month, and let's see what transpires.
I'm happy to do whatever the pleasure of the commission is. Okay, so I don't think we need action then. We'll pull it and put it on the agenda for next month.
Okay.
All right. One more month, all right.
Yeah.
All right. There we go. Okay. Okay. All right, moving on to item number seven on the agenda, which is an action item. It's an amendment to the existing delegation of authority and designation of an acting executive officer. As I think all of the commissioners know, we're going to lose Ms. Sims, who's been a fantastic executive director for the last 4 years, who's moving on to a new opportunity and a great opportunity for her, and we're very happy for you but sad for us.
Yeah.
And you've guided us very well through this entire process, and you will be sorely missed, and I'm sure at the end of the meeting we can all say nice things about you.
All right.
All right, over to you.
So, well, we realized in looking at this this upcoming transition period that our existing delegation of authority, which allows the executive officer to handle administrative and staffing issues, did not have a provision for an acting executive officer to do those functions. So we would propose two steps here this morning. One would be to add language to the existing delegation of authority that would add in that you delegate to the executive officer or the acting executive officer if the executive officer position is vacant, the authority to do the administrative tasks. That will allow us to sort of move forward on the second item, which would be to designate an acting executive officer to do those functions until such time as this commission chooses its new executive officer. So I think we'd like to do that in two votes. First, the amendment to the delegation.
Okay. Are there any questions for commissioners? Commissioner Ball? No? Okay, motion?
Motion to change the language, and then I think we're going to separate motions.
Separate motions, yeah.
I think so.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Hines, second by Commissioner Delfino. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great.
Okay.
On to the second one, which is the designation of an acting executive officer, and I will entertain some motions at this time.
I'll move that Rachel Malante be appointed as the...
I'll second that.
Okay, moved by Commissioner Hines and second by Commissioner Ball, that Rachel Malante be the acting executive director. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Rachel, welcome. Increased role. And I should say, I'm sorry about your ankle. You seem to have had better luck. I hope that gets better. Okay, with that item of business done, we'll move on to item number eight, which is our discussion item, or action item, I'm sorry, and approval of our annual review of the State Water Project. Ms. Sims.
Thank you. One of the statutory responsibilities of this commission is to conduct annual inspections or tours of State Water Project facilities to get updated on key issues facing the State Water Project each year, and then to submit a report on that review to the administration and the legislature. So as in previous years, staff has prepared the draft annual review that's in your binder. We've worked closely with Deputy Director Torgerson and his staff to make sure all the information there is accurate. This year we focused not only on some of the tours and site visits that all and some and all of you have done, but also issues having to do with drought and water deliveries. Again, the continued focus on safety and workforce issues. And those are outlined in here, as well as some overview of the construction activities. So we would propose approval of this, and then we will forward it to both the director and the resources agency for their review, and then submittal according to statutory guidelines.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Any questions or discussions from commissioners? See nothing. Have a motion. Moved by Commissioner Curtin.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Quintero. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Okay, moving on to item number nine on the agenda. I'm going to start this with a statement, and I will say for benefit of the public that we have the public comment at the end of all the comments from the folks who are going to speak on this. So I'm going to read a statement, given the fact that we are now in 2015 and that the water bond has passed and that we have considerable increased responsibilities. I wanted just to read this, and I'm just going to read it. In approving the water bond, California voters have entrusted this commission with a huge responsibility. It is one that we do not take lightly. We are committed to developing an investment program that will improve the health of our water management system and yield far-reaching public benefits for all Californians. The importance of public benefits associated with water storage projects cannot be overstated. We look forward to a thorough and thoughtful public process guided by significant stakeholder input and collaboration to determine how best to invest in public purpose projects that provide these critical benefits. The bond calls for this funding to begin at the end of 2016. Between now and then, we're absolutely committed to creating a program that will result in great water projects, is mindful of the public's trust that we spend this money efficiently, and benefits our state, its people, and our environment. So I wanted to do that formally to underscore the importance of what we're undertaking, and I know what all the fellow commissioners share as well. And with that, I will introduce Director Mark Cowan, who is here, and we want to appreciate you being here, Director Cowan, and for all of your updates over the years and hopeful involvement and help throughout this next process.
Thank you much, Chair Byrne. I just wanted to take a moment of your time to wish you well in this new year. As you point out, I think these new responsibilities that come with Prop 1 make this probably the most important year or couple of years in the California Water Commission's history. So a lot's going to be asked of you, and I'm glad that you're all here and ready to take on these responsibilities. When I look at the Prop 1 language, of course, it makes very clear that the commission is to make determinations regarding this new Proposition 1 funding program independent of the views of the Director of Water Resources. Now, I can't imagine why that's good public policy. Nonetheless, it is. And I want to express to you how I'm ready to respect that public policy and also ready to stand by with the resources of the Department of Water Resources to help you conduct your important responsibilities. We have, of course, significant expertise that we can lend to this process, and we will do so as at your request. More importantly, though, I think it's important to recognize that our two agencies are going to have to be close partners in advancing storage for California, which, of course, is the primary purpose of this section of Proposition 1 and an important part of the California Water Action Plan. The department, of course, does have direct responsibilities as outlined in the bond language to review the financing plans for proposed storage projects and assure that 75% of the funding is essentially contracted for before the commission takes action to provide funding for any project. So that's a direct responsibility. But even more important than that, I think it's probably fairly obvious and true that any storage project will be enhanced in its ability to provide public benefits to the extent it is integrated into the broader state and federal conveyance and storage system in California. So to that extent, we will need to work together to understand better how that integration can take place, under what circumstances, what conditions, and that will be an important part, I think, of your consideration of the actual public benefits that any of these projects might provide. So I just wanted to appear here briefly before you today to reach a hand out to you and both wish you well in your important work coming up and to pledge our commitment to assist you and partner with you in carrying out this important piece of work for California. Let me just also take a moment to say nice things about Sue, since I won't be here at the end of your meeting. Sue, of course, has been a very important, valuable member of the Department of Water Resources for years as our public affairs officer and then our chief deputy director, and now, of course, serving with you all here on the Water Commission. She's provided exceptional service in all of those roles and will be greatly missed, but we certainly look forward to working with you, Sue, in your new role. So good luck.
Thank you.
So that's all I had to say. I'm happy to hear your comments or take any questions if you so wish.
Any questions from commissioners?
Well, I can't help but ask. Thanks for the assistance that the department will provide in this endeavor. I'm wondering, I probably should know this, but haven't reviewed all the materials yet. Is there also cash available to the commission to hire outside consultants to address issues that you raise, like integration with the state system? Do we know what our budget is for this? Okay.
We do. And you we do. That actually, we've got a number of issues that we had intended to go over this morning. Perhaps not, I don't know that we're planning to get into the exact detail, but we can talk about sort of the opportunities not only to use expertise from the department, I mean, with the goal of being as efficient as possible. The expertise that exists in the department will be extremely valuable, and we have a couple of presentations on that, but we also recognize that there are there's additional information, both technical, economic, and perhaps others, that's going to be critical to putting together a program, and there are resources that the bond makes available to us, and we've been working closely with DWR staff to identify what some of those opportunities may be, and we can talk about those at this meeting or at subsequent meetings, but there certainly are the financial resources to be able to go outside of the department or Fish and Game or State Board to do that. So we'll get into that in a little more detail later this morning.
And there are also additional resources proposed in the governor's budget that will assist us all. So we'll have an interest in seeing those budget aspects approved in this fiscal year budget.
Commissioner Delfino.
Yeah, so I did have a question. So thank you, Director Cowan, for coming. It's nice to see you. And the question I had was, I did see the project management plan in here and the funding that was proposed. So does all the funding for the commission have to go through DWR's budget and then thus go through the regular budgeting process? And so we would have to work with DWR to put together,
Well, we plan to work with DWR because they have the financial assistance infrastructure and the budgeting infrastructure. But unlike the rest of the bond, and feel free to step in here if I'm not correct in this, but the funds are continuously appropriated to the commission for this program. And so it's a little bit different than most of the programs where, I mean, it will be in the governor's budget, but rather than having to go and get that funding appropriated to the commission for the activities, it's money that we have available to us absent that process. Now, that being said, I think it's probably behooves this commission to keep both the administration and the legislature very informed of the activities and the spending that we plan to do, but it doesn't actually have to be appropriated as part of the regular budget process.
Does it go through Department of Finance?
Rachel may have more detail, as may DWR staff. We are going through the normal process of submitting, for example, budget change proposals. But as I understand it, the approval process is somewhat different at Department of Finance, and it's certainly different in the legislature than a typical program would be. So we have folks here to talk about that and who have a lot more expertise on that a little later. But it is a somewhat different process that for the approval of the funds, at least. Is that...
Thank you.
I think I'll take my leave now before you ask a question that Sue can't answer and interpret. Details that will be worked out. Certainly, a continuously appropriated program is unique for our experience, so I'm sure there will be some kinks to work out along the way. So thank you all very much. Have a good meeting.
Dr. Curtin's good.
Sorry, you're not quite done yet. The battle for continuous appropriation in the initial bond and the second bond, second legislation was quite substantial, and it is a big responsibility. And I think also those many people in this audience who worked for this bond realized that the governor really insisted on a efficient, frugal approach to spending of money. And I want to be very cognizant of that on this commission. There is money, as I understand it, I don't know how much, in the bond for administrative purposes, but to be blunt about it, as much as we can get from other agencies in terms of expertise and, people doing the job without overburdening your staff, which I'm sure has plenty to do with the rest of the bond and other things, I really want to emphasize that we should be very, very careful about adding staff and that sort of thing in terms of spending and try to use the existing resources as effectively as possible. I mean, we will probably have to bring some people on for administrative purposes, but you have infrastructure in terms of financing, not financing us, but how to handle the finances, just the human resource issues. And we hope you will continue to support us as much as you have. But we're going to be dealing with other agencies as well, and we'll be asking them for help, I'm quite sure. And hopefully we can get them to grant us some support without spending the bond money on that sort of effort. Because, I mean, $100 million, give or take $25 million for administration, can go a long way in actually producing water if we spend it properly, as opposed to more staff. And I don't want to burden the staff any more than we have, but the more we can get out of this money is the message I believe the administration sent during this process, and I'm really going to be cognizant of that. So
I really appreciate that observation, and you know, this isn't new in terms of how the Department of Water Resources works. It's been a theme for some time that most of our programs fit together one way or another, and finding the efficiencies and ways to get the most out of every program towards our broader mission, of course, is paramount to what we do.
Great. Thank you very much, Director Cowens. Appreciate you taking the time. Okay, Ms. Sims.
Okay. So agenda item 9 is we're going to have a series of presentations. We want to talk to you about the work plan and some of the proposals that we've incorporated in our planning process to get feedback from you, make sure we're headed in the right direction, incorporate your input and your ideas, and basically give us marching orders for the next steps that we're going to be taking. So what I'd like to do first is talk about some of the overarching issues. We put together a program implementation plan, kind of a high-level document, which would be something that we can share with the public that articulates your goals, your objectives, what the major deliverables are, and the time frame. We'll walk through that in a moment. I want to talk a little bit about our assumptions on the stakeholder process and get feedback from you on how to most effectively engage stakeholders and have a public process that goes not only above and beyond our normal process here and what's in statute, but really gets to the issue of helping to inform and provide you with the information that you need to make decisions. I want to talk briefly about commission, some of the scheduling issues, some of our outreach, and a little bit on the administrative activities. Then I'm going to ask Maureen to talk about a couple of the legal issues associated with CEQA and OAL. Rachel then is going to spend a little more time talking about the project management plan that she has developed. We started with a huge stack of sticky notes in my office all over the walls, and that's morphed. That now is almost laughable in how simplistic we thought this was on November 6th and 7th, and she's sort of scoped out not only those tasks with the help of DWR staff, but also a proposed schedule for this commission's meetings over the next several months, some of the outstanding issues that we see that you'll want to look at and consider. So she'll talk about that. Then we'll have a couple of presentations from DWR staff. Ajay Goyal will talk about the support that his storage investigations group can provide, technical expertise in light of some of the what we've identified over the past year or so as the remaining questions to be answered. Tracy Billington, who does the department's financial loans and financial assistance program, we'll talk about how they're going to be able to support us so that the work that we do early on fits into an application and evaluation and funding process as seamlessly as possible. She'll also talk about the notion of doing a scoping survey early on. I think we all know some of the projects that are out there, but certainly not all of them. It would be, I think, very helpful to get a scope of an idea of what the universe of projects is out there, people that think they might have projects that would be eligible, and find that. And then we're going to ask Gail Chong, who is the bond accountability person for the department, to come and just speak very briefly, that we're all in good hands with the process that they have set up in terms of following all of the state guidelines on the use of bond funds. She can talk about this issue of continuous appropriation, how we stay on the right side of doing that in a way that makes sense, and then the bond transparency issues. So if there are no questions or no suggestions that we skip any of that or do something different, I think we'll go ahead and start on that, and we can ask questions throughout the process. We plan to take see if we're on schedule. Up to an hour and a half for that. At the end of that, Tim Quinn from AQUA, they have a process where they have brought together a lot of their agencies to look at the bond and the program, and they'll have some recommendations later this spring, but I thought it would be helpful to know that they are also looking at a lot of these issues. So that's our morning, and unless there's any questions, I think we'll go ahead.
I think that sounds good.
Okay. So you all have a binder that we are going to continue to update. You're welcome to take it with you. You're welcome to leave it here, and we'll have it. But it'll sort of walk you through some of the steps that we're doing now. The first thing that I wanted to talk about was this program implementation plan, this draft document that's in the front. It's also, the draft is on our website. We realized as people started coming and talking to us, even before the bond was passed, but certainly afterwards, that it would be good to have a document that, at a high level, talks about what the bond program is, what our objectives are in implementing it. We have a section here on guiding principles that talks about things like that we intend to follow the law, that we intend to follow all of state requirements and practices in CEQA, that acknowledges that this program fits in with the California Water Action Plan, and that the decisions that you all make will be made better and informed by a robust stakeholder process. Certainly, beyond sort of your traditional stakeholders, there are other groups that we presume you will want to engage, tribal governments that, again, are eligible to apply but may not necessarily, may require some focused discussions so that, and same with disadvantaged communities, that people aren't necessarily always here in Sacramento and in the water world at this point, but certainly have water needs that we can be made aware of those. The human right to water issue that was presented to this commission, and then certainly that we want to use, you know, the best science and sound economic principles. We're looking at projects, as you've told us over the last couple of years, that leverage other resources and that have the greatest statewide benefit. So, again, the draft is some guiding principles that we put together as staff that we thought would communicate to the public what our approach is. The next section, we just at very high level of detail talked about what those key activities and projects are going to be, the regulations, the guidelines, the program development, all the way up through the project selection. And again, we talk about the stakeholder process that we'll actually get into some more detail a little bit later, but talked about that. Some of you have already mentioned this morning this issue of a project management team. It's been my approach and Rachel's and working with DWR staff that we will try and be as efficient as possible in terms of adding the resources that we need. We're talking about a couple of positions within the commission. We don't want to duplicate expertise that exists other places, so where that expertise exists, whether it's with DWR, whether it's with the State Board, whether it's with DFW, whether it's with, you know, any number of other agencies, we will coordinate and collaborate with them to do that. Where that technical and other expertise doesn't exist or doesn't exist in a way that meets your needs, we will use resources that we'll talk about in a little while in terms of outside contractors and consultants. Again, short-term contracts, most likely, that can get us what we need in the time frame which you need it, as well as any additional legal support that you and our council thinks would be helpful and useful. That's also spelled out here on the org chart. And then we have a timeline that, again, at a fairly high level, talks about the schedule. We'll get into more detail, but essentially our premise was we've got a statutory deadline of next December, a year from this coming December, to finish the regulations. We all know from experience that the OAL process, we have up to a year to complete that process. We didn't want to presume that, I mean, it would be great if we got through that faster, but we also didn't want to presume that we necessarily would. So when you start backing that up, you get to a point where a draft set of regulations potentially would be approved by this commission no later than late summer, early fall, and go to OAL in October so that they would have a full year. We would have that time for the 45-day and subsequent 15-day public comment periods and get a final product back to OAL by the following October, no later than, so that it could be reviewed through their process and finalized by the statutory deadline. I know some of you have indicated that you see those not as targets but as no later thans, and staff's prepared to work with you to do that. But we didn't I'm sorry, did you have a question?
I was going to ask a question. So how does it work We have to approve them by the end of next year. And does that include, so we want to get them to the OAL, they go through that process, mm-hmm. and then when we finally approve them and submit them, then and that's where I'm thinking, then right. there's another, how long does that
And our assumption would be that in October, by October of 2016, you would submit them to OAL, and I believe, although folks can correct me, I believe they have 30 working days from the time the final statement of reason, what we call our final, are submitted, and that would...
We would be submitting the draft regs in October of 2015. The process has an envelope of 1 year in which to refine them to the satisfaction of DWR, and at that time we would be submitting to them a formal notice of proposed rulemaking and also a draft of our regulations and something that's called an initial statement of reasons, which is the why of the regulations, why are they necessary, and it also has to include all the documentation on which the decisions that have been reached in the rulemaking are based. In other words, it's in a formal administrative record. So a lot, that front loads a lot of our work before we submit to OAL, and then we have a process of a year of working with them to refine the regs as necessary. And that process goes a year, and then we have, as Sue pointed out, a few months between when that would end, which would be October 2016, and when statutorily we're supposed to be done with the rulemaking process, which I believe is December 15th, 2016.
Mr. Delfino.
Just to clarify, because I think you might have misspoken, you said to the working with OAL to the satisfaction of the Water Commission, not DWR.
It's working with OAL I meant actually to the satisfaction of OAL, but
okay.
also to the Water
right.
Commission.
But it's back and forth with us and the
that's
and OAL
and that's
in terms
an important
of if
distinction.
We've submitted something to them and it meets their their standards, which are, you know, there probably will be a little bit of back and forth between them and us.
There will likely be.
But it is between the Commission and OAL.
Correct, and that's an
okay.
important distinction between most of the regulations that come before the Commission for ultimate approval is here the Water Commission is the promulgating body. We are creating the administrative record. We are doing the rulemaking, whereas with most regulations that we review ultimately and approve, the agency is doing the rulemaking.
And so you, as our counsel, will be the one, usually there's probably more than one person working on a set of regs, so there's also council capacity as well that's an issue.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
And we can't actually spend any money on any projects until December of 2016 as well. So if we were to adopt them earlier.
Right. I mean, there's been discussion about you can't allocate the money, but perhaps you could start considering projects much earlier, and you've got clearly a process of evaluating. There's a technical review we've talked about that might be done by an expert panel, and then it would come to this commission. And so, but no money can actually go out the door until December 2016. So, but the thought was to take these next 6, 7, 8 months and to try and take the existing set of regulations with a very involved stakeholder process and lots of input and get those as close as we possibly can before the better the product is that goes to OAL, potentially the less time it would take there, and that would allow you to have an approved set of regs earlier than this time frame.
I think for those of us who went through the ag water measurement regs, we're painfully aware of the process.
So right. So we tried. That was our premise. I mean, you could send the regs to OAL right now, but the thought is they're not ready yet. And let's use this right. time that we have to, you know, to answer the unanswered questions, to get input from people that that have potential projects, people that have done this, you know, done this for a living, and all of the expertise. I think we all have a sense there may be some additional technical and modeling work that would be helpful. So it's really just a staff presumption, and this can be adjusted over time. But we tried to work backwards and give the opportunities to improve the product as much as we can before it goes to OAL, and then to allow as much time as is allowed in that process. Again, hopeful that perhaps it would go faster, but okay.
Sure, yeah.
I don't want to drag the process out, trust me. I mean, it's probably going to take longer than we imagine, and we will be very glad when it's finally finished in terms of getting the regulations and guidelines done. But I do think it is important to have, now that the bond is actually passed and people are really focusing on what the commission has put together, to have a transparent and public process for people's input. And while I appreciate the work that the consultants and staff have done on the regs as they're in their current form, there's still a lot of work to be done on them. I mean, it's a good starting point. But there's going to be a fair amount of work that needs to be done. So it's going to be a delicate balance of trying to work expeditiously, because I'm sure people are anxious to start the granting solicitation process, but getting the regs and guidelines in place with sufficient public input and expert input. And trying to do that quickly. I think and we can talk about the work plan when we get to that point, but I think the general timeline that you've laid out is actually fairly aggressive, and hopefully we will be able to meet it, because there's a lot in the steps between now and the end of 2015. Right. So,
well, and as you point out, I mean, that once it goes to OAL, there a public process continues then. That is an opportunity for public. So, the stakeholder process that we're going to talk about, how we're envisioning setting that up and how quickly we want to start moving on that, that doesn't necessarily stop in July or August or September. It can continue. We anticipate that it would, but the thought was to get a lot, as much work as possible done, and give you the information to make as many decisions as you can before the draft regulation might go this fall to OAL. So, that's this project. Oh,
Commissioner Nebosco.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say that during the ag water measurement regulation stakeholder meetings, some of the commissioners were present at some of these meetings, and I think it would be a good idea if we had commission members engaged in the stakeholder process. Mm-hmm. Of course, we'll have to check and see how many of us could attend these, but.
Right. Well, they are public meetings, and we can notice that. We actually have a plan for that, and that was one of the questions we were going to ask, or at least offer the opportunity, because I think, too, like you said, when you hear the discussions that are taking place, that's sometimes also very useful and helpful. So.
And one last point, Ms. Sims. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, as far as the public process, and for I think Ms. Delfino's words are appropriate in the sense that people, I think, are starting to pay more attention now. But I do want to make people aware that we have had these draft regulations on the website for well over a year, and we've had a very good open public process on that to date, which we're obviously going to continue and ramp up. But for people who have not seen those, I would encourage you to do that, because that is our starting point for where we're going to be going next. Mr. Curtin? Okay, Ms. Simpson.
Okay, so that is, again, this is the sort of the overview document that that we're happy to take comments either here or you can send to us to incorporate. It's really intended sort of for as a starting point. We've got a lot more detail on all of these, but to help explain the commission's approach, our a possible timeline at this point, and what some of those activities are going to be. So I wanted to share that with you. We've talked a little bit about the stakeholder process and have had some discussions. I think many of you are aware that DWR, through the development of some of its earlier other regulations, have put together advisory groups and stakeholder work groups on technical issues. We're looking at a process similar to that, and I've asked Ajay when he comes up here in a little bit to talk about how one way that might be structured efficiently. We'd like to start that process in February by contacting people that are interested and working with them on a schedule that's workable, and then figure out the most efficient way to bring that information back to the commission throughout the spring and throughout the summer. So we'll do that. I'll make a mention of the commission meetings. As you know, we've held these commission meetings once a month for the last several years. I think it's very likely, and Rachel in her in her proposed work plan, sees a number of meetings later this spring and summer where we'll be looking perhaps either at day and a half or two-day-long meetings or perhaps two meetings, or we may want to structure it so that there are some subgroups that meet and then bring back. But I think we can all anticipate that the workload will be significantly more as we get into this process, so we can talk about that. I also wanted to mention that we've been working on a communication plan to help not only staff but also all of you with some basic materials that we'll make available in terms of talking points and PowerPoint presentations that you can, of course, customize, but that I'm sure you will all be asked for to go out and speak to groups that you're associated with and affiliated with. And we just want to let you know that in addition to sort of reworking our website so that the information is easily available, that we also plan to have sort of a suite of tools that you can use in terms of talking points, presentations, as we get into more and more media interest, materials that will help support those activities as well. So I wanted to let you know that we are working on that kind of information to be useful and helpful in explaining the program and where we are. Next month, Department of Fish and Wildlife and State Board staff will be here to talk about their role. We're in the process of negotiating an interagency agreement with both those agencies where we would fund one, I believe it's a senior environmental scientist, but one position in each of those agencies so that they can be directly involved and connected and have the resources to allocate somebody to do that on a full-time basis here as we get through the development of this program. And they've been very cooperative and very helpful. They've already started meeting with staff, and they wanted to get a couple meetings into that and then come back and talk to you next month about their activities and your expectations for the priority list and the additional work that they'll be doing to support the regulations and the evaluation of projects.
So you're working out an agreement with each agency. It would be good to know what the scope of that agreement is.
I can get you a copy of those. We have scopes of work that we've put together for both of those. But rather than, over the past couple of years, they've been very gracious with their time and coming and looking at this. But this way allows us to actually fund a position so that that person or combination of people can be dedicated to being at meetings, being at these stakeholder work groups and technical discussions and meeting with DWR and commission staff. So let me, I'll make that available to the commission, what's in that scope of work. And
Okay. Yeah, because that would be important because, I mean, appreciate the fact that they were sort of doing their inputs to us pro bono in a sense, although they were directed to do it under statute. But the documents that they've produced thus far are pretty need a significant amount of work, and one of the big missing components is this issue of relative environmental values. Plus, there's a number of other issues in here about net improvements to the Delta and, you know, priority. So it would be good to see in the scope of work specific outputs from them and when they're expected to be produced so we would have them in time as we're working through the regulations.
Okay. We'll get those to you. And I know there are some time frames on that, but it would be helpful to get any input that you would have as well. And then finally, I wanted to mention that, and I won't go into detail on any of this unless there's questions, there's also a large number of administrative activities that the commission has been working on in terms of the appropriate coordination with Department of Finance and with the agency in terms of budget, spending proposals, positions that we think we need both within the commission and with DWR and with these other agencies. We're looking at a couple of technical services consultants in terms of economic issues and modeling or other types of projects. What those opportunities are, using existing resources makes it a much faster process. So we're trying to identify those and what we might be able to tap into using our funding. So there's a number of those sort of internal activities. Gail Chong is going to come and shed a little more light on the process having to do with the funding that's available to the commission. I think Commissioner Curtin referenced that up to 5% of the bond funds can be used over the life of the bond for administrative activities. We're poised to do far below that number. It's not our intention to spend all that's available, so we're trying to be incredibly efficient in what we think, especially not knowing. I mean, we've been sort of doing this without without all of your feedback. So especially at this point when we don't necessarily know all that we're going to need, our initial proposals have been very lean and far below that. And I think that that's probably a good approach for us to take, given the posture of this commission and the scrutiny, and knowing that every dollar that we don't spend means money that can go out to projects, which I think is sort of ultimately our goal. So that's kind of my part of the presentation that I wanted to share with you. I'm happy to have any comments on this, or we can work through. Maureen was going to talk next about some other legal issues, and we can just wait for additional comments on any of this until the end, or I'm happy to get any other input that you have at this point on these pieces of the puzzle.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll proceed. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks, Sue.
Passage of the water bond, specifically Chapter 8, directing us to fund certain specified water storage projects does create several statutory issues that we've been looking into.
Just up a little bit.
Okay. Is that better? And we've discussed the rulemaking process a little bit, but I wanted to back up a little bit and note that of all the projects in the water bond, Chapter 8 stands alone in being the project that is subject to a formal rulemaking process. None of the other projects that are funded by the bond have to go through that process. And also I wanted to point out, as has been alluded to, that we are directed to do our rulemaking in consultation with three other agencies, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Water Board, and DWR. And as Kim pointed out, we have been working on draft regulations for well over a couple of years, and they, in my opinion, provide a good starting point for where we are now. The OEL formal rulemaking process is a very formal procedural process that puts you on a timeline, basically, once you have submitted your materials to them, which, as we discussed a few minutes ago, is we're aiming for October of this year to get our materials to them. And that will include a formal notice of proposed rulemaking together with our draft regulations and our initial statement of reasons, which will explain why we think the regs are necessary, and also what information we've relied upon in developing those regulations. And after submitting the notice of proposed rulemaking to OAL, the commission has 1 year to work with OAL and OAL with the commission to complete the rulemaking process. And a lot of that is procedural, but a lot of it's making sure that all the documents that back up what our regulations are doing are present in the record. And then the water bond, the statute itself, directs us that to complete the rulemaking process by December 15th, 2016. So as you can see, and again, as Kim commented, it's a very aggressive packed calendar to get that done. So that's one of the legal issues that's created, is the formal rulemaking process. Another is a new law that came into being in 2013, and it requires regulations that have an economic or a potential economic impact on persons or businesses in California in excess of $50 million to go through a special economic analysis above and beyond what is required by the formal rulemaking process. And OAL does not oversee that. The Department of Finance does. And we have been in contact with them in recent months with our draft regulations, and very recently received from them a preliminary determination that our regulations will not constitute major regulations, which is the category of regulations that have that pass that economic threshold and will not have to go through the additional economic process. It's a provisional determination. We're going to keep working with them, but we're hopeful that that will stick. The other issue I wanted to talk about is CEQA, and the water bond statute itself does say that no money may be spent on a project funded
by Chapter 8 funds until draft environmental documents for that project have been submitted and been available to the public. Now, there, I want to clarify that that environmental analysis is project-specific. The lead agency doing that environmental analysis would be the project proponent. The commission would be responsible as versus a lead agency in that process. And I also wanted to talk just briefly about another statute that we're aware of all the time here at the commission, which is the Bagley-Keene Act. And the creation of a bond program of this size brings a lot of Bagley-Keene issues into sharper relief. And we're going to be reviewing some of those issues this afternoon in a Bagley-Keene workshop, where we'll discuss some of the requirements that will apply to the Water Commission's activities as we go about implementing the bond program. So those are the major points I wanted to cover. And if anybody has questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Questions for Ms. King? Yes. No? Yes, Commissioner North.
You blew right through this, and I couldn't write the notes quick enough on CEQA. I think I understood that the lead agency, the responsible agency to conduct CEQA, will be the agency sponsor for the project, right?
That's correct.
What's the role of the commission and or the department in the CEQA process for a project?
The role of the commission in a CEQA process for a project would be as responsible agency.
Responsible agency. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Ms. King.
Welcome.
Sue? Hey. Rachel, are you next?
I think so.
Yeah, no tough questions for you today.
Simply. Now, feel free to ask as many tough questions as you want. I am very glad to be here this morning. All right, good morning, members of the commission. So today I am going to talk to you about our project management plan and our draft monthly work plan. Both of these documents are actually draft at this point. The project management plan is attachment B in your binders. And this is actually just one of many documents that make up the complete project management plan. So I'm not going to go through the entire plan in detail today. These are more internal documents that are meant to help staff manage the project. But certainly any attachment is available upon request. But the purpose of this presentation of this document is to give you a better understanding of how we are managing the project from a staff level. We are using DWR's project management guidelines and templates that have been developed to be consistent with the Project Management Institute's project management body of knowledge. And as I said, these are drafts and will be revised based off of your feedback at the meeting today. So very quickly going through the draft project management plan, you know, it includes a summary of the project, and right now we are defining the project as the development of regulations and guidelines. And so another project management plan would be developed as we move forward with the actual grant program. But this was sort of a manageable chunk of this program. So you'll see that it includes a summary of the project, environmental considerations, the roles and responsibilities of commission staff, DWR staff, Fish and Wildlife and the State Water Resources Control Board, as well as stakeholders, and other considerations, including resources and deliverables. The next attachment in your document, the next item in your binder is attachment C. This is our schedule in the form of a Gantt chart. We also have a full-sized copy over here, since the Gantt chart doesn't quite translate into being read over three different pages. But we have identified over 100 discrete tasks that will need to be completed over the next 2 years, and how they relate to each other. So again, this is what we're using internally to keep ourselves on track. But the document that I'd actually like to go over with you today is attachment D in your binder, and that's our draft monthly work plan. And as Sue and Maureen mentioned, what we did when we were putting this together is looked at the target date of getting the draft guidelines to the Office of Administrative Law in October, looking at all of the unanswered questions and issues that really still need to be addressed before we'll have a copy of the regulations ready to go over to the Office of Administrative Law, and then worked backwards, looking at what we could do in the next few months between now and September in order to get ready. So this is just for the work related to this program. It doesn't include any of the other commission's other work, such as on groundwater or state water project issues. And it's organized into three columns. So there's issues that would be addressed at the commission's regular meetings, key non-agendized work, work being done by staff, and then also special meetings such as stakeholder meetings. So as you can see, the commission did not meet formally in December, but staff has been doing a lot of program and project development work. We have all of the issues that you're going to be talking about this month related to the bond. A couple things I'll mention under key non-agendized work. We are working on revamping our entire website or the bond portion of the website to make documents really easily accessible and make information very easy to find for the public. So we should be going forward with that quite soon after this meeting. The other thing that Sue mentioned and that Tracy will be talking about in more detail during her presentation is we would like to release a scoping survey to the public. As you know, we did have a survey last year around this time looking at water projects. However, this survey would be really focused and tailored to projects that may be eligible for this program to help the commission get a better understanding of what the universe of projects is, how much funding they would be looking for, and also at what point the projects would be ready so that when the commission is making decisions moving forward, such as how many rounds of funding there would be, when those rounds of funding would be available, that decision would be well informed through the scoping survey.
Rachel, I have a quick question.
Yes.
A process question.
Maybe yes.
For Sue and Maureen too. So the guidelines that go with, are those officially a part of what we have to adopt? Or, because I'm seeing them on the timeline and they go a little separately. So I'm curious, do those need to go to OAL or do those, well, are those informal?
That raises an interesting legal question. My initial take on it statutorily, because the section of the bond in, I believe it's Chapter 4, which directs us to issue guidelines, is separate from the direction to promulgate regulations. It's in a separate section. And if they wanted our guideline process to be part of our formal rulemaking process, the legislature could have said as much. But they made a distinction, and they directed us to do formal rulemaking for the regulations, and then in a separate section directed everybody under the bond who's going to be administering funds to do a guideline process. OAL might have a different opinion on that, but that's my initial take on it from a statutory interpretation perspective.
So what does that mean, then, that we would have to do just approve them as a body?
The guidelines?
Yeah.
We would approve them as a body, and I think we would take guidance from DWR's experience with guidelines for grant programs, which is extensive, and I think some of the people who will be talking later this afternoon might be touching on some of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So formally, it sounds like our action then would be the final action.
There is a separate process that is required in Chapter 4 of the bond for the approval of regulations. It's less extensive than the OAL process, but it would include three public meetings, and it would include posting the guidelines on the Natural Resources Agency website for 30 days, and it would include sending the guidelines to the Natural Resources Agency for a determination that they're consistent with existing law. So there is a process, and that is included both in our process flowchart and in our detailed schedule. And we're assuming that that process would have to take place after we have final approval of the regulations.
It would be, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, why is that assumption?
The guideline process is much shorter. So our plan would be to develop these documents simultaneously during the next several months because the questions that need to be answered really influence both documents. However, as there are changes that may be made to the regulations through the Office of Administrative Law process, there may be corresponding changes that need to be made to the guidelines. We would expect them to be 99% done at the time when the regulations are approved. However, if there are sort of, you know, issues that come up, changes that are made within the regulations that require corresponding regulations in the guidelines, we would need to make those and then go through the finalization process for the guidelines. But we don't expect that to take too long.
Commissioner Delfino.
Well, first of all, I would just say it would be good to get guidance from OAL sooner rather than later on something like this, because if they make a determination that it all should be going through the regulatory process, that sort of impacts us. So I'm assuming you've already made the inquiry into them and follow-up would be done.
We have made the preliminary inquiries and we are looking into that further.
Okay.
As to what their opinion is on that.
Okay. So because I think that raises a question of, you know, what's currently in the guidelines might there's a lot more in the guidelines right now than there are in the draft regulations, and there's also questions about what's in the guidelines maybe should be in the draft regulations.
Absolutely.
Because you know, guidelines are just that, they're not you don't want your guidelines to suddenly become underground regulations. So I just think that that's something that we need to work through very carefully to ensure. And honestly, I would say to avoid an issue, you probably are going to have to put more into the if OAL determines the guidelines can go separately, you're probably going to have to put more into the regulations than we currently have that are currently in the guidelines. I would also say that, you know, we want to get a full and rigorous public input into the guidelines. So I'm not sure, you know, we should be sticking to only three public meetings. I would say that this should be developed as concurrently as possible, being mindful that, of course, you know, with OAL changes, you have to be flexible and make those changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we would certainly anticipate an equally robust stakeholder and public process for the guidelines, but in terms of the sort of statutory requirements for approval, we would plan to go above and beyond that. Okay, I'll keep going if there aren't any other questions at this point. So we'd previously talked about the issue of groundwater projects and having DWR staff present an example groundwater project that would qualify for funding. And so we were planning on having that in February. And we thought what might be really helpful is to have three subject meetings, one on groundwater storage in February, one on reservoir reoperation and conjunctive use in March, and one on surface storage projects, both larger and local regional, in April, and look at some of the outstanding issues of what is the exact definition of a project that would qualify, you know, what is the definition of public benefits of these projects through the lens of different project types during discussions at those meetings. One of the issues that we would also like to tee up in February is discussion of distribution for funding for permitting and planning in the bond. I'm not recalling the exact section right now. I think it's 79755C. They talk about the potential to give out funding for environmental permitting of projects, so the commission will need to make a decision about if or how they would like to go about that process. There's a lot less direction in statute about exactly how that process would work, and so we'd like to tee up that issue in February. In February, we would also have released the scoping survey, and that would be ongoing, and we'd be having our first stakeholder advisory committee meetings. As Sue mentioned earlier, we would also have an update from the State Board and DFW, an update on the development of the Stakeholder Advisory Group, and we're hoping for a briefing from the Nature Conservancy on their report that they had briefed the Commission on late last year on integrating water storage, now that that report is available. So going on in March.
Go for it.
Sorry. So maybe we'll get to this, but there's a lot that is going on in January regarding, you know, getting staff in place and securing contracts with consultants and getting the stakeholder process put into place. And I'm wondering when, between now and the February meeting, and we're not really covering that in February, when we might be able to get some of that
information on where things are at. I mean, those are kind of, I'm assuming you're getting some guide, you're going to ask for us to give you some guidance on the stakeholder process.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be nice to have a little bit more of an iterative process instead of us just giving you direction and then you go off and do it. And then hopefully you've chartered it. I, you know what I'm trying to say is a little more of a feedback loop would be useful.
Sure. So sending you or having some of the commission members involved in the development of the stakeholder group charters, something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Also, I think it would be good for us in terms of, since we are, as Commissioner Curtin noted, you know, charged with the spending of the bond funding, that we get some input on, or at least we are advised, you know, what consultants are you bringing on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much fund? I mean, I think we do have some responsibility to have oversight of how funding is being spent.
Agreed.
A couple of the presentations that will be up next, we'll talk in more detail about those, some recommendations, and then we can get feedback both today and then build that into either discussions between now and February or at the February meeting. But there we are going to have some additional discussion that Ajay and Tracy will provide along those lines as well. So we may get a little bit closer by the end of this meeting, and then we can decide sort of what additional information and decision making would be helpful.
Mr. Curtin.
You know, I just want to throw out for consideration, I think we're going to have to think about, call them subcommittees or whatever, but one mm-hmm. would be exactly what you thought or said, so that there are a few people paying attention that can be brought to the board so that we don't have to spend all the time at the board meeting going through all of it. We have some members of the commission who have asked the questions and, you know, sort of organized the information. So, you know, the first thing that popped into my mind, Rachel, was the $6.1 million allocated for the work group or whatever for a two-year period. And there's no, I didn't really get a chance to read through it, but there's no explanation of how that's to be spent. And is it going to be bond money, or is it going to be through other agencies, or are they going to contribute, and so on and so forth? I think that's a pretty substantial kind of group that needs to get together.
Yeah, we can certainly follow up with you and get you a more detailed breakdown of the budget. That is, what I can answer for you now, that is bond funding, and that includes essentially our entire program administration budget for bond-related issues between now and December 2016. So that includes staffing for commission staff, the positions that we would be funding at DWR, the positions that we'd be funding at State Board, and Department of Fish and Wildlife, and also some contractor funding.
Right.
But we can certainly get you details
right. Rather than
between now and the next meeting.
Today, but, you know, off the top of my head, $6.1 million for 2 years. If this is a 10-year program, that's $30 million. And we haven't even got a chance to look at that. So I really would encourage a subcommittee of some kind.
Okay.
I think that's a great idea.
I think that's a great idea as well. Commissioners otherwise agree with that, or? Yeah, and I'm seeing Commissioner Curtin, Commissioner Delfino subgroup. But that is critical, I think, and important
okay.
to have. And how do we want to – is that something that you want to communicate with – we could talk about it and then with Sue – I guess it won't be Sue, it'll be you, Rachel – and figure out what to put on the agenda for the February meeting and what to disseminate to the two of them.
Yeah, we'll work with both of you to either set up a subcommittee meeting and also talk about what we would present in February on that topic.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So moving on to March. In March, we would be planning on closing our scoping survey so that we have plenty of time to incorporate the responses that we get from that survey in the development of the regulations and guidelines. We would also be thinking about looking at reservoir reoperation and conjunctive use projects, both the questions that we'd be looking at with every other type of project, and also you may want to discuss the maximum cost share for those types of projects, since those are an exception in the bond language. We would also be planning on an update on the tribal government consultation process, a discussion of how the commission plans to incorporate the human right to water in disadvantaged communities, and also an update on the work of the stakeholder work group. So then in April, we would shift our focus to surface storage projects, both the larger CalFed projects and local and regional projects. The stakeholder advisory group and subcommittees would continue to meet and to continue to develop recommendations to the commission. We would also have an update from Department of Fish and Wildlife and State Board. So we would essentially have them coming back to the commission every other meeting to discuss their work. We would also be presenting the results of the scoping survey. We'd be looking at a presentation from AQUA on their Water Storage Policy Task Force recommendations, since those should be available at that point. And then again, in this document, we have an update on the work of the Stakeholder Advisory Committee coming to you at every meeting. So if that's something you would like, we could go with that. If you would like it less often or more often, we could do that as well. Moving into May, since we will have the results of the scoping survey, we were planning on discussing some of the issues related to process and the guidelines, because the scoping survey results would really inform that discussion. So that includes questions like, does the commission want to have multiple or a single round of funding? Would you be interested in something like a pre-application process? Really defining the eligibility requirements, and also getting the definitions of some of the terms that are used in the statute but have not been clearly defined at this time. And we would also be looking at some of really the big outstanding issues. We would hope to have most of the recommendations and work of the stakeholder committee and subcommittees done to inform this discussion. So talking about what information is going to be required of project applicants, what the selection criteria for different projects are, and also common metrics by which projects can be evaluated on an inequitable basis. So then that would be our first two-day meeting. Based off of what we anticipate the workload being at this time, we would expect to have two-day meetings at the very least in May, June, and July, and potentially more as needed as the work process is developed. In June, we would anticipate the stakeholder advisory group final recommendations being presented to the commission, and also a continued discussion of some of these meatier issues, the required information, the selection criteria for projects. Essentially, how do you improve the quality and consistency of information across projects? And also the role of the findings and the special consideration for different topics that were addressed in Chapter 2 and Chapter 4, things such as the extraordinary public benefit that groundwater provides and how we incorporate that into the evaluation process. We would also expect the State Board and Department of Fish and Wildlife to provide the Commission their relative environmental values and priorities by the June 17th meeting, so that those can be incorporated into the regulations. We are hoping to have a draft of the regulations package based off of all of this work that has been done during the spring back to the commission by July, because that would give the commission several meetings to review the information, to look at unresolved issues. We could use July and August to work through any remaining issues, whatever they end up being as we work through this process. And we're hoping that that would give the commission time to approve the regulations in September so that they can be submitted to the Office of Administrative Law by October 20th. As we said, all of this information that would be developed during the next several months would inform both the guidelines and the regulations, but we would anticipate in September just approving the regulations so that those can be submitted to the Office of Administrative Law and we can begin that process. And then some of those outstanding guidelines issues could be looked at in a little bit more detail as the regulations are at the public comment period. So we would anticipate the first 45-day public comment period beginning October 30th, 2015. Staff would be collecting and reviewing public comments between then and December 14th, and that would get us through the end of this year, and then staff would bring you the comments from the comment period and issues for consideration or a revised draft of the regulations in early 2016.
Commissioner Duffy.
So, I will repeat my comment about this being a very aggressive schedule.
Yes,
and in particular, I'm a little concerned about this sort of compression of information that's going to be occurring around June, and how that actually translates into comments being prepared for informal public comment by July 8th, because basically what you're saying is that we're going to get both the boards, state boards and DFW's priorities and relative values information. We're getting the stakeholder advisory work group's recommendations. And in 2 weeks, you're going to turn around regulations that you're going to put out for public comment prior to us actually seeing them or talking about them at our committee, our commission meeting in July 15th. So the only I would just say that you might want to think, we might want to think a little bit more about that particular part of the schedule, because I think that there'll probably be a fair bit of information coming in, and maybe there's some way to back it out a little bit so that information could be coming in sooner.
Okay.
And that's part of the reason why I was wondering about, you know, the scope of work and deliverables from the board and from the DFW. Plus, you know, this raises the issue of how we're going to be discussing the stakeholder process, because maybe instead of having them deliver all of their recommendations in June, we could be asking that recommendations are being delivered on specific topics in a more concurrent, you know, a you know, as a month-to-month basis. I'm just, in order to accommodate this schedule and to give all of us and the staff time to incorporate obvious, thoughtful, hopefully thoughtful and probably voluminous input, I was reading through that and I was kind of like, I don't know how in the world they're going to do that unless they don't sleep. So it's just a thought.
Okay. Yeah, we can certainly look at how to adjust that schedule as we talk with you after this meeting.
Great.
Any other comments or questions? Yeah, Commissioner Heitz.
Rachel, would you go into the stakeholder process again? I see the month of January is the recruiting stakeholders. How are you doing that? Who is a stakeholder? Who can be a stakeholder? Or whether they're eligible or not?
So Ajay, in his presentation, is going to talk about this in some more depth. What we've been talking about, we're working with the Center for Collaborative Policy, who helped facilitate the agricultural stakeholder group for DWR's agricultural water measurement regulations. And so we're tapping into their expertise into developing this sort of process, and we're also planning on having their staff facilitate the meetings. What we're talking about is having sort of an overarching stakeholder advisory committee and then some technical subgroups who would meet on specific issues that need to be addressed, engineering, setting common assumptions, economic evaluation. But I think Ajay will be able to give you some more detail on exactly what that would look like during his presentation.
Thank you.
Mr. Saraceno.
Along the lines of Commissioner Delfino's comments, at some point the commission's going to have to make some decisions once we get beyond the process discussion. And what I don't see on here is an articulation of the specific decisions that we will need to make. And I think that will be very helpful in determining which kinds of decisions from the state board and Fish and Wildlife, for example, will feed into our fundamental decision-making process. I think that's really important, and I'm hoping we get on with that sooner rather than later.
Okay. Ajay, in his presentation, is going to be discussing the outstanding issues and questions that need to be addressed. So I'm hoping that his presentation will address some of your issues, and maybe we can work with you after the meeting to incorporate that in a more articulated way into the work plan.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate Commissioner Saraceno expanding on that. The other
point I just want to be clear on, because I don't think I made it very clearly, was I don't think that we should be putting out informal public comments prior to the commission actually seeing the sum total of the draft comments and making some kind of, having some kind of approval to put them out for informal public comment. It's just because that'll be the sum, because that really triggers a very compressed piece of comment period. So that's my point.
Okay.
I think it's a good one.
We will change that. Okay.
Okay, Rachel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so it's Ajay, are you next? You got it, Rachel?
Good morning. Good to see you again. Wish you a happy new year. So in the last, like, by the way, several of the points that I'm going to be making have already been brought up by several of you, Sue and Rachel. So in the last 3 years, we have made some significant progress. What we have is Department of Fish and Wildlife, they have developed a list of ecosystem priorities. State Board has developed water quality priorities. And then we have developed a document that lists various economic methods and tools that are available which could be used to value the various public benefits.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but just to clarify, are these priorities developed by the State Board and Fish and Wildlife different than what they provided before that was essentially a list?
Exactly. They're the same one. I'm going to go back in detail as to what is yet to be done. What we have is a working draft. And then next I'm going to talk about what else has to be done in those documents and then how we'll accomplish it. Thank you. So then next thing is we have developed a working draft of regulations, a working draft of the guidelines for the application review process, and then also developed a working draft of the initial statement of reasons that Maureen talked about. And in addition, we developed several issue papers describing what could be considered a water quality benefit, what could not be, similarly about ecosystem benefits and about recreation. We had a great depth of discussion with you on those subjects. Now, in our past discussions, several areas were identified that have yet to be developed, as Anthony, you brought up. The priorities that we have are too broad. Like 8-10 priorities, and almost everything is included in them. Now, we have to work with Fish and Wildlife in refining those priorities, getting into the details. And we will need direction from you and also through the stakeholder process as to what level of detail is required in those priorities. Another area that we have to work on is relative environmental value. In the document that Fish and Wildlife and State Board prepared, they mentioned that it's very difficult to say a fish is better than a bird, and or be relatively, you know, discussing one benefit over another. They've been saying they'd rather do it on a project basis. When they look at the project, they will say, okay, this is better than other. So, but the legislation clearly requires that the regulation contain, that shall contain ecosystem priorities and relative environmental value. So this has to be done. Now, another thing that has to be done is that the regulations say that the funding be awarded on competitive basis on expected return on public investment, and should provide measurable improvements to the Delta ecosystem. So now to compare projects on the same level, we have to provide to those applicants assumptions that they need to use to evaluate to the performance of those projects. Assumptions meaning what level of development they should consider, what level of demand, population growth, land use they should consider in analyzing their projects, so that everyone, all applicants, use the same assumption. What in CEQA, what's called baseline. We're not talking about that baseline, but something similar we will have to develop that's broad, and it can be, it will bring all the applicants on the same platform. Another thing that we need to do, again, to have fair comparison, is each project values the project in a similar fashion and using probably, if possible, the same numbers. What we have learned, seen, is that there are number of economic methods available. One method could give a benefit-to-cost ratio of, say, 1:1. Another method for the same benefit could give a benefit-cost ratio of 4. So how do we ensure that there is a fair competition between applicants? So one thought that we were having is maybe we should, working with the stakeholders and with economists, with experts, develop economic values for the various public benefits. For example, for water, and this has to be done for both public and non-public benefit. Reason is, through a cost allocation process, the costs for public and non-public will depend on, could change. If the water supply, which is non-public, is valued at low, with no lower numbers, then the cost allocated to public is going to increase as a result of that. Less cost will get associated, allocated to the non-public benefits, and vice versa. So what we were thinking, that if it's possible, we don't know, we're not sure yet, but we got to work with the economists and come up with value for, say, water supply in this region, in this type of year, would be this. For use of M&I or ag for this region, this type, it would be this. And same thing we would do for the various other benefits, like ecosystem, for fish, for this type of fish, for this season. If water is put in the river, per acre foot benefit would be this much. Value of that benefit means it would be $100 or $200 per acre foot benefit. So if this is possible, again, this work has to be done so that we can bring in all these projects on the same level. Otherwise, it will be very difficult to look at the applications and determine what is the return on investment. Then, another area that we haven't worked on is the legislation says the regulation shall contain methods of quantification of public benefits and management. The management part, which is to see, to ensure that the projects are going to provide the benefits that public is going to be investing in. So we have to make sure we develop a process and we develop a monitoring system or whatever the process requires has to be developed. That part hasn't been done. Then, this is all related to the regulations. Then, on guidelines, which is about the application, what an application should contain, and how this application will be evaluated, we have to discuss about this independent expert review panel. What responsibility this panel will have? What kind of composition, what is the composition of this panel likely be? And then, what they can do, what they cannot do. Then we were thinking of doing having a peer review of the applications that come in, a staff level review. So what that review should be, that we have to discuss. Then comes the ranking criteria, that how the projects would be ranked based on, because the legislation says they have to improve Delta ecosystem, they have to provide state benefit to the state's water system, and also provide return on investment. And then comes about priorities, that is this the benefit that the project provides, is this a priority for the state? So we have to develop weightage factors for each of those types of benefits and develop a mathematical system as to how we would come up with the ranking and then have that mathematical ranking presented to you, and then you would again dwell upon it and adjust things or make determination. All that has to be developed. So develop these things. What we were thinking, we start off by taking, setting up a public advisory process, a stakeholder advisory process. For that, as Rachel mentioned, we're thinking of something similar, what's done similar to the ag regulation, wherein we would develop a stakeholder advisory committee, which will consist of staff from various agencies that are going to be administering those public benefits. Would have staff from NGOs, environmental organizations, and also staff from organizations, agencies who have projects in mind to get funded. We would have a representation of those types of projects. So we haven't yet sat down and made a list of these categories and who potentially could fit in. Then maybe once we have that, then the plan was, of course, we'll share that with you, get your input on and feedback, and then go and send a letter of invitation to those people and see if they would be available to participate in these discussions and provide advice on various issues. Then there are several areas which I mentioned which are highly technical. We are thinking we should form some subcommittees under this stakeholder advisory committee. And those would be, one would be responsible for advising us on what operational assumptions that we should have all the applicants use. And then another would be about developing economic values for the various benefits, which will mostly have economists, more of economists. And then another would be on developing relative environmental value. We will have NGOs involved. Again, of course, this will be led by Fish and Wildlife and State Board. And we would discuss with other experts in the community here to come up with idea of comparing different benefits. Then another subject is application evaluation process. How should applications be evaluated and ranked? So this again has to be developed. So we were thinking to do all of this. What we would have is stakeholder advisory committee would meet in the maybe from now till August about 3-4 times. And then the subcommittees would meet once a month. Again, we are talking about 4 subcommittees, a lot of meetings. And you are all invited to participate when they are set up. Secondly, we are trying to set up a meeting with State Board and Fish and Wildlife and Commission staff every second week. This is to discuss all these subjects and continue to make progress. And we would brief you on a monthly basis as to what's happening at the agency level, plus what's happening with the stakeholder process. We would brief you on progress made in all these advisory committees and the input we have received. We would provide you regular updates. That's what we were thinking. And then as far as staffing is concerned, it will be 2-3 staff members from my branch, some from Tracy Lindbergh's branch, who is going to be briefing right after me, in addition to the commission, and one staff person from State Board and one from Fish and Wildlife will be assigned to this project. And then as far as consultants, as Rachel mentioned, we are in a process of finalizing a task order to bring in Center of Collaborative Policy to have them assist us in this stakeholder process so it can be more transparent and we can ensure that we don't miss anything. Then as for to do economics and also common as these assumptions for the operations and even relative environmentals, all these things we will need consultant support. At this time we are in a process of developing a task order with CH2M Hill. We'll include Steve Hatchett, who worked in the past, Roger Mann, and also some modeling staff, in addition to some more economic staff, will be involved in it, in helping us lead the stakeholder process. So process would be basically we would have our staff and consultants help us in preparing materials. We will convene a public meeting or meeting of those committees and then receive their input, and then go back and adjust, revise things and come back. So it will be an iterative process where month after month we will make progress. So this is what we were thinking of and would like to get your suggestions.
Thank you, Ajay. Open up for comments. Commissioner Saraceno.
Thanks, Ajay. As usual, you've done an excellent job of anticipating the questions and process that we'll need to put in place to get to where we need to go. I'm concerned, however, that you're a little optimistic in terms of your schedule based on our previous experience here.
Yes.
Regarding the stakeholder process, there were lessons learned, I think, from the ag water measurement stakeholder process that could be applied here, and I'm sure you're thinking about those. Are you going to use a facilitator in order to make this process as efficient as possible?
Yes.
Could you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, we had a meeting with Dave Suppose, who is the associate director at CCP. And there is another senior facilitator, Juliana. So we are talking to both of them to see if they can help us with this, leading the facilitation process in the meeting. They will help us develop a charter, describe where we will describe the responsibility of the various committees and the advisory committee, and who the mix of the members that should be there, and then when and how often and how to meet. Plus, they would have somebody who is good at taking notes, he's experienced in it, would capture all the discussions and provide us those reports on a regular basis. And then we will have access to all those reports, plus we will make summaries of it and present in these meetings. And you're welcome to participate in each of those meetings, plus the meeting that we will have with Fish and Wildlife and the State Board. We can inform you of that also.
In just as a follow-up, in talking to a number of people that were involved in the ag water measurement stakeholder process, there were a number of specific critiques that they would recommend be put in place. And one was having clearly articulated objectives going into the meeting, each meeting, and the other was having homework done in advance of the meeting such that technical information, data, facts, figures were available and essentially resolved rather than having a large group of stakeholders trying to argue whether or not a certain device can measure to a certain standard when that could have been done well in advance. So are you going to incorporate those kinds of things, and also will you provide the commission with a kind of a detailed schedule of the issues and questions that you hope that the stakeholder committee will address?
Sure.
And resolve?
Yes. So what we will do is, as soon as we have CCP on contract, working with them and our staff, we will develop these charters for the various committees, subcommittees, and the advisory committee about their responsibility and objectives and what they can and what they cannot. And then another thing is we are, as I mentioned, hiring CH2M Hill, the staff from CH2M Hill plus our staff will be working in the background in preparing material for these before these meetings happen. And then every meeting, some of the key people will be present, taking information about what happened and what was discussed, and then would go back, bring that information for the next meeting. And this would be done for each subcommittee and the advisory committee.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Delfino, then Commissioner Orth.
So I just want to take a step back and just ask, I'm assuming there's something written where all of this is written down, because honestly, it would have been really helpful to have received that prior to getting your presentation. I mean, I followed what you were saying, and I know you're all working very hard, but because I'm not sure in the four buckets that you've articulated if you're actually going to capture all of what I think are some of the outstanding issues that have been undefined. Like, for example, I'm not entirely clear where the issue of cost effectiveness is going to get addressed, or what a net improvement is, or, you know, what measurable improvements of the delta are. So, you know, maybe those are laid out already, but I would very much like to see that.
We will develop a document.
Okay, that would be great. Thank
These
you.
These things, you know, we have developed, like, I thought through this, what all the issues are, yesterday, 2 days ago.
I understand. I understand how quick.
Thinking about those.
Yes, I understand how quickly. And so that leads me to my next question, which is, when we are able to see that, what's the time frame in which we can provide you with input if we feel like maybe something is missing, or maybe we don't understand why you're asking a stakeholder committee, subcommittee to determine something? I mean, and it would also be helpful to know where exactly are the CH2M Hill consultants going to be plugging in?
Okay.
And what exactly you're asking them to provide? I mean, I get the facilitation part of that.
So for the CH2M Hill consultants, the thought was that there was it about 7-8 years ago, there was a process called common assumptions, which was for all the big studies, all the big storage studies. This was an effort done jointly with Reclamation and DWR and other agencies like Contra Costa and such, where it developed, what would be the assumption that all these projects should consider in analyzing their, in developing the projects, which would cause common assumption. In SQL, it's called baseline. That was used for the baseline. So now we are bringing in the same person who was the lead consultant in that effort. And Sean Suever, one of my staff, he led that effort from the department side. So we would have him, along with Rob Leaf from CHNM Hill, lead this discussion with stakeholders, which would include staff from agencies and would have staff from various consultants and NGOs who are experienced in this, in deciding what all should be included. So that's what the role we want them to play. And for economics, what we were thinking is if Steve, Roger, and some of other junior economists, if they could help us develop values for the various public benefit, if that's possible, then it's, we will again have to have a discussion with them and you all and stakeholders as to how to make sure that the economic values and the method that various projects use are going to make provide us information that we can compare with other projects. Otherwise, it will be very difficult. How, you know, benefit to cost ratios, with the cost, of course, we know that construction cost based on cost estimates, that's the cost. But the benefits of a project comes from two sides. One is you take the, take the assumption that we were developed, and I'll go through a modeling analysis and determine this much water would be for ecosystem, this much for water quality, this much for water supply. And then what you do is you monetize those benefits on an annual basis. And you would use the economic value that we develop, and they would monetize, saying that, okay, the water supply value of the benefit of the project is so many million dollars every year. And same thing for ecosystem, same for water supply and other benefits. Then what they would do is spread this, is distribute, the, say, for example, ecosystem is 25% of the total project cost. So this is a complex analysis. I'm just in simple manner I'm going to describe. 25% of the total project cost, it means what we would do is take, say, a project is $100 million. It would be amortized for like 40 years. Whatever the annual payment is, so that annual payment would be split between the benefits it provides every year. So 25% of the benefit of the payment will have to be made by ecosystem. So it means 25% of the cost would be provided, would be assigned to ecosystem. So the benefit cost ratio of ecosystem is the benefit it provided, the value of the benefit, plus the cost that were allocated to that. So that's the BC. We could do by each benefit or the whole project. So this detail has to be developed.
Commissioner Orth.
I guess I want to echo some comments and concerns about the stakeholder committee and process. I agree with Commissioner Saraceno that there needs to be absolute clarity on the scope and the purpose. And I think lessons learned from X77, I know many people don't view that as a positive, and they may potentially view this as just a repeat of that process. I think the way we address that is with charter and clarity. I do, as I look at the draft work plan, see not an opportunity for the commission to weigh into that charter, and I think, as Commissioner Delfino noted, it would be helpful to us to see that and try to, you know, correlate the subcommittees and the stakeholder group themselves to tasks that we need input on. And then I think the last thing I'm even more fundamentally interested in is the work plan provides that today you're going to begin recruiting stakeholders. I'm curious as to how you see that recruitment process going, and do you have target numbers of participants? I know you mentioned you haven't developed a list or categories or people yet, but I'm curious as to what you're thinking about in terms of numbers and process to get and how you're going to reach out to people and how that's all going to work.
So regarding the clarity and the charter, what we were thinking, what we would do is as soon as they are ready, we would have commission staffs email you those charters. So you have time to review, and you can provide us your comment in track changes or in the Word files. And we would incorporate them. And then, and we could do this, you know, on everything that you decide you want to be part of. And we are open to everything. And we are here to assist you in whatever you like, you can, you know, participate in. Secondly, as far as the recruitment goes, we were thinking this advisory committee would be about 30 people and would have agents, staff from State Water Project, especially the State Water Project operations, would have staff from the modeling group, would have similar staff from USBR, and then would have staff from Fish and Wildlife State Board, and then a few other agents. I'm just thinking out loud here right now.
Sure.
And then we'd have some environment NGOs. And then we would look at, you know, we're hoping that this scoping survey, project scoping survey, is going to identify who the likely the project proponents are going to be. We already know from the past survey that was done earlier through ACWA. We have some idea of that. So we're going to use that in identifying under each of the four types of project who are likely going to be the participants asking for funding. Then from those organizations, we will identify, either we identify or ask them to identify a person who would participate in these committees. And once this is, the list is developed, and some subject matter experts on the five public benefits, some could be some consultants. And then we would develop that list and send it to you for review. Get your feedback on it. If you feel this is reasonable or we should include or not include certain areas. That's what we were thinking. And then for the subcommittees, these are going to be more or less open meetings. Where, but the advisory committee would be on selection. We will select them. And for the advice for subcommittee, it will be led by us, DWR staff, and State Board and Fish and Wildlife. And then we will have these consultants that I mentioned, would be facilitated by CCP. And for the consulting support, we will have CHTML, who we have selected at this time. And then we will invite other consultants who we know have been working in such projects and invite other agencies. This will be informed to everyone openly, and they're willing to join us in those discussions. So that's the thought we have been having.
Ajay, I was going to say, I appreciate all the comments. We're running a little bit behind. Why don't we, and I was going to echo those thoughts as well, so why don't you develop what it is you're talking about and work with staff, and you can disseminate it to us. And I think it would be helpful to kind of see, as Commissioner Delfino said, exactly kind of what the plan is in writing.
Okay.
And then we can add input, and then through staff, and then also at the February meeting, we can finalize whatever it is that you're doing and and provide appropriate input. But there's a million questions we could ask. Okay, Commissioner Ball, one quick one.
So as you're going through all of these things, what is the financial impact as you put this together, whether these are volunteers or paid consultants?
Okay,
need to
so,
know that.
Yeah, so what we have is at this time in the funding plan that Sue mentioned, Sue and Rachel mentioned, we have three staff persons from our group included in it. And then Tracy's group, who's going to brief next. There's some couple of few staffs in her group. And then Rachel, and then a couple other new positions that they are going to be filling. And then one from Fish and Wildlife and one from Fish State Board. These are the group of staff. And then for consultant, we now what we had in the previous estimate that we gave, we had not thought of such a robust stakeholder process. This is something that has come up in last 1 month. We've been thinking more about it, and seeing that if you're going to do such a elaborate stakeholder process, we might need more consultant support. Staff, these staff should be enough, or we might maybe some more, a little bit more funding for the staff. Reason I say that, if somebody from the Division of Environmental Services, somebody from Flood Management is attending, and they ask for us for a charge number to attend these meetings to provide input, we should have at least a charge number for them to charge on. That's why I was suggesting maybe we have some budget for that, not for a full position, but some for these interim staff members, and some more for consultant, because there's a lot of meetings, a lot of work that needs to get done.
Yeah, Jay, my recommendation would be to, as what Rachel was saying earlier, why don't you incorporate that into that plan that that subcommittee will look at, and we can have it ready to look at during the next month and for the next meeting.
Yeah, maybe this could be our first assignment. What do you think, Kim?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to ask the same question, and we're talking about a staff of about 10, 12, or 15, perhaps, and then some consulting costs, and I think you and I should have a little meeting and flush that out and perhaps put a written report.
That
back.
Would be great.
Yeah.
And appreciate you volunteering.
Oh.
Okay, thank you, Ajay.
Thank you so much.
All right, Sue. I'm sorry we're running a little bit behind. I know we've got I see Tim out there waiting patiently.
We'll work with staff and get that information to you as quickly as we can. Just two more quick presentations to kind of round this out. Gail Chong, who's our DWR's bond transparency manager. I just asked her to speak for a couple minutes, just that we'll be part of that process. And Gail, also there had been a couple questions early on about the continuous appropriation and what that does and doesn't mean as far as our involvement with Department of Finance. So I think you could probably just briefly touch upon that as well.
Okay. I'm Gail Chong. I'm the Deputy Assistant over Bond Accountability. I'm here to ensure the commission that DWR actually has a actual geobond group, and I've been doing it. This is going to date me a little bit, but I've been doing geobonds for over 20 years. So the department right now has probably about around 10 propositions that are water bonds, monitoring over $16 billion. This includes Prop 1. So if you look at Prop 1, you see several different entities involved. When the Department of Water Resources is the administering agency. So what that means is not only do we monitor DWR's funding, but since CWC is part of DDR, we'll be monitoring that, and also all the other conservancies, resource agencies, whoever's involved in Prop 1. So we oversee all the expenditures, the encumbrances, all the financial information that working with Department of Finance and the Treasurer's Office. Now, with Prop 1, the Water Commission was very fortunate to get what Sue was talking about, the funds continuously appropriated. Because back in, I think it was when we had Prop 204, it had initially said that funds were continuously appropriated. And what that means is when funds are continuously appropriated, that's without regard to fiscal year. Now, meaning that if you did a budget and you needed $50 million, within a budget, but within that fiscal year, you needed more. You can obtain more. You don't have to go in and re-ask and do the whole normal budget process like we have with appropriated funds. Appropriated funds are only good usually for a 3-year period. Whether if it's cap outlay funds, usually good for a 5-year period. But continuous appropriated is you have your budget is wide open. You need more, you can ask for. But the only caveat that you have there is that we have to ensure that, now, we only have 2 bond sales per year. So when those happen, we work with Department of Finance and Treasurer's Office. The Treasurer's Office has to, we have to actually give them out a cash flow projection, what exactly we're going to be working on. And what happens is all this goes to Finance and Treasurer's Office, and they may go out for a bond sale, and say if the commission asks for this current fiscal year, because commission on Prop 1 is the only people that are getting any funding for this fiscal year because it's continuously appropriated. And so say if they wanted $5 million right now, but went out for a bond sale, and the bond sale went out, which is going to be coming in March. But if they say they overall, and we have a bond sale, that means they're not only selling for Prop 1, they're selling for all the other propositions. Say they only were able to sell $3 million worth of bonds. What would happen is that the state treasurer's office would look at what the priorities are for each of the departments and agencies. They may only give you know, the commission $1 million out of what they sold. But that is actual cash that can be used. Now, you cannot, we used to do what we call pooled money investment loans. That has changed. We no longer do those because of what happened in 2008 when the economic crisis happened. So what we do now is we have to sell bonds up front. They're called bond proceeds. You have to have that cash on hand in order to pay, whether for staff costs, you know, consultants, any type of costs that come in. So with that, with this drill that we're doing this right now, if the Water Commission were to want to spend money at this moment, they could not do that because a bond sale has to come in. Once a bond sale comes in, it's actually allocated to a proposition. And then all the expenditures that come in for the proposition actually has to be associated with a bond sale. So in short, we have all the tools. DWR has a database that tracks all the expenditures, the commerces, the projects. We work directly with Resources Agency, who has a consolidated database that reports up to the governor's office. I work with agency all the time with finance. Our DWR Bond Accountability Office is basically the liaison between the treasurer's office, the controller's office, Department of Finance, legislature, agency, everyone. And it's usually me that goes to the meeting. So with that said, again, Prop 1 with the $2.7 billion that CWC received, contingency appropriate, is a very good thing because in the past, the legislature always wants control on the monies that are within a budget. This gives the commission more flexibility to ask for more money whenever they need it. Do they have to do a budget? You still have to do a budget, but you have that flexibility to use however much you need. But again, you got to think about if you need more or you're expecting more, you may not have the actual cash to spend. You may want more between now and June, but the actual bond sale may not have given you the monies that you need. So that's the only caveat there. But as far as budgeting, it's flexible, it's wide open, and it gives you the opportunity to you know, request your needs at any given point.
Question? Thank you very much, Gail.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Tracy, I'm going to ask you, unfortunately or unfortunately, to be brief if you can, Tracy.
I will be brief.
And thanks for coming back.
I'm probably not going to say what I thought I was going to say walking into here. Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me back. So I was going to give you a quick overview of the programs we manage. We have a bunch of programs. They're in various stages. In Proposition 1, we'll be managing the Integrated Regional Water Management funding, and there's groundwater planning and project grant funding. So some of the things we're going to provide for example assistance to the commission is help with developing the guidelines, help with developing the valuation criteria, and then, you know, just getting to the point of making the award is not the end of the process. Then there's the agreement and contract management. So there'll be needs for agreement templates and things along those lines. One of the things I wanted to be kind of responsive to the discussions we've already had is, you know, on a philosophical issue on what's the difference between what should be in the regulations versus in the guidelines, if you nailed it and you know you're right, it can go into the regulations. If you're not sure about it and you might need to make a tweak or a decision, having the guidelines is a much simpler revision process. So if you don't know how much money you're going to award to a specific type of project category, it would probably be more appropriate to put that into the guidelines, because if you don't have as many projects or much demand for the amount of money you allocate it for a type of category, you would have to go back through a regulation change to make those changes. So that's an example on more of the practical application of what would be a difference between a guideline and a regulation. And then for the other issue on the timing, on the schedule, I helped Rachel with that. For the number of commission meetings and the number of stakeholder advisory groups, a lot of this is back calculated. So you'll see a listing of, I think, 13 stakeholder advisory groups.
that is, the assumption was, well, how many meetings could we get in there if we had a meeting every 2 weeks? Not that we're necessarily saying the commission will commit to or not commit to doing meetings every 2 weeks. For finalizing the guidelines versus the regulations, those can be done concurrently, but there are slightly different approval processes and public meeting requirements. So the initial discussions with the commission staff was, is it less confusing to have the public comment period separate? But as we're moving forward, and if we see that it would be more confusing or more burdensome to have two separate public comment periods, we can figure out a way to sync up the public input periods on the guidelines and the regulations. The next thing, you have a flow chart in here, and I did a little color coding. There are swim lanes, which are basically the horizontal lines. So on the top of the flow chart, and this is attachment E, the diamond boxes are examples of decision points that the commission would be making. And then there's things where various people are feeding into back and forth. So this is just a real high-level graphic to take you through what the regulations and guidelines process will be. For the public input process, I didn't want to have arrows going all over the place. So there's just kind of a placeholder saying there's many opportunities for public input. If you have a, have follow-up questions on this, we can discuss it at your next meeting. The next item that you've heard a lot about is this scoping survey. So in some of our initial discussions with the commission, we were thinking about, would you want to have a pre-application where people with possible eligible projects could come in and give you a limited number amount of information, which wouldn't require them to do a lot of expensive modeling and other material economic analysis to only find out that they weren't eligible for funding. So that was the initial item concept behind the pre-application. Through our discussions, when we're talking about what type of decisions that the commission needs to make, you may need to make decisions about, are you going to put in a maximum amount, a cap on the maximum amount of money that you would award to any one project? Are you going to take the amount of funding you have available and divide it up between the categories of types of projects types that you can find? So we got to the point where we thought, if you had a better idea of what your possible projects were, it could help inform those types of decisions as we're moving forward. So we're looking at trying to figure out, the types of projects, what are the level of demand, the demand for possible funding. Are these projects ready? So you can't award money before the end of 2016. Do you have very many projects that would be ready to go at that time, or do you have a little more time to take a more measured approach? So I think this can help inform those decisions. You also have the ability to provide funding for environmental documentation and permitting. This could help you inform on whether that is an investment you choose to make. So you have in your package, attachment F, that provides the type of questions that we would be asking in the survey, and I believe we're hoping to have your okay to put the survey on the web with a reasonable response time. And that concludes my not prepared remarks.
Thank you very much, Tracy. Okay, well, we will be sure to be following up with you on many of these issues for sure. So at this point, thank you, Tracy. We're going to have public comment, and we have one item left before lunch, and I think we've got a significant amount of public comment, so if we can try to keep it brief, that'd be great, but we also want to encourage people. So at this time, if there's any members of the public who want to come up and speak as to this item, then feel free to just queue up. And
one other option might be, since the next agenda item is very closely related to this, it would also, one other option would be to hear from Tim Quinn about their process, and then perhaps people, but it's certainly up to you, Chairman.
I'm fine with that if people are, as long as you're, not too long-winded, Tim.
Okay,
we might as well go with public comment then if Tim is willing to wait.
Thank you. Chairman Byrne and members of the Commission, my name is Barry Nelson with Western Water Strategies. I'm here today on behalf of a coalition of NGOs, though these are environmental, fishing, and community organizations that have developed a very comprehensive package of drought management recommendations. I've just passed those around. For anyone in the audience who'd like to look those up online, they're easy to find. They're called recommendations. They're called a report called Wetter or Not. In that report, there's more than 50 recommendations in an extremely broad set of areas. One of those areas is with regard to expanding capacity in a variety of ways in California. And again, one of those in particular is with regard to storage. Those recommendations begin on page 18 of the document that you just received. And I'm not going to go through, there are eight recommendations there. I'm just going to mention three of them very briefly. One of them has had some discussion already by members of the commission, and that's cost effectiveness. The funds you have sound like a lot of funding. You're going to receive a lot of applications. So cost effectiveness and developing a process that's really rigorous to make sure that you're spending your funds cost effectively is going to be really essential. Second recommendation, it's making sure that you work to develop a real storage strategy. There was a comment earlier by Mr. Saraceno discussing the interconnection of the extremely complicated water system that we have in California. We have an enormous amount of storage today. We have projects that are under development. We also have a broad range of tools to use to reoperate storage and operate storage in a more sophisticated way. That's going to make simply evaluating each project on a project-by-project basis difficult. So this coalition recommends that you think about developing a broader approach to thinking about storage and think about a strategic approach that recognizes that we have different tools, different storage options, and different benefits that come from different types of storage in different places. And third, a recommendation, as I said, I'll just mention three briefly of the eight recommendations that are in that document. The third recommendation is that you develop a really rigorous method to ensure that that the environmental benefits claimed by applicants are credible, are reasonably certain, are significant, and are high priority. There's a long history that many advocates could tell you of projects that have claimed environmental benefits that didn't always come to pass. And making sure that those benefits are certain, significant, and high priority is going to be essential. You have a number of tools to do that. You've touched on a few of them today. One is the project evaluation panel that are in your guidelines. There's been a discussion of consultants who could be obviously helpful in that process. The third option I wanted to mention is that there are existing scientific institutions and processes that might be useful for you to go out and consult. They might or might not be formal members of that evaluation panel. They might not be consultants, but there are some resources outside of the commission that could be useful in making sure that those public benefits are real, making sure that you're spending the dollars that you're entrusted with as effectively as possible. Some of the organizations involved in developing these recommendations are going to be working to develop additional recommendations for you. I'll simply close by saying that in the last 10 or 15 years, we've often had a not very productive discussion about water storage at the policy level. That discussion has often been disconnected with progress and developments on the ground in California. And we think that you have an opportunity and a responsibility to really sharpen up that debate in a way to ensure that you can spend the funds that you're entrusted with in a way that will effectively and cost-effectively benefit both the California economy and the California environment. And we look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Barry.
Good morning. My name is Tim Strochane. I am representing the Environmental Water Caucus and Restore the Delta, where I work as a policy analyst. The EWC sent the Commission a letter January 5th about scoping your work plan for the regulations and guidelines implementing Chapter 8 of the water bond. Sue Sims and Rachel Belanti indicated they would distribute it to you. Wonderful. I'm glad to see nodding heads. That's great. I'm glad. And but I was also heard that from Commissioner Delfino at the meeting in November that she was interested in having those things put online, and I haven't seen that yet. So I would just like to ask that the letter and other letters go online as soon as possible. Great. I'm glad to see they're in the packets. That'd be great. I want to highlight just a few points from our letter, from the EWC letter. First, we think that so far you're interpreting Chapter 8 too narrowly when it comes to project eligibility. Our letter describes the important policies we think your commission should use in both the regulations and the guidelines. Second, we urge you to avoid worsening the over-appropriation of water rights by prioritizing storage projects that would depend on new water rights. Existing consumptive surface claims are over 5 times the average runoff in the Central Valley, and approving storage projects that need new water right claims will worsen this situation and further inflame water conflicts. Third, the Commission can choose to prioritize sustainable and cost-effective approaches to storage. Chapter 8 may say that the CalFed surface storage investigation and conjunctive use projects are eligible, but the saying so does not make them good projects. There are better solutions, we feel. For example, San Fernando groundwater basin storage can expand using recycled water and stormwater. Investing in many other Southern California groundwater basins will move the region towards greater independence from imported water. Many such basins are already adjudicated, and investing in them will lead to less demand for imported water from the Delta in particular to implement Chapter 8. Real water reliability and security would result, and they would help reduce reliance on the Delta, as called for in the Delta Reform Act of 2009. We urge you to avoid approving costly storage investments that show poor yields. These funds are scarce, so please grant them wisely. Finally, everyone commenting on each step of the process should have access not only to commission public documents, but to the comments of everyone else involved. This will encourage meaningful debate and result in a better overall product from your process. And if you have any questions, I'm open to that. Otherwise, thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much.
I have one quick question. Has your group thought about where the water would come from to store in Southern California groundwater basins?
Well, as I mentioned in my remarks, some of that water can come from recycled water sources and from stormwater. It doesn't inherently depend on imports from the Delta.
It would be helpful to the Commission if you had any studies that would show quantities of water that were available from those sources.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much. Yeah, please. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, my name is Daniel Hegarty. I come to you as a citizen of the state of California, and I would like to address some language that is in the draft now for the guidelines, but in the context of a couple things. One is your mission statement to promote public discourse, because I'm going to be talking at a pretty high level here in terms of almost a philosophical approach to this Proposition 1 funding. And secondly, your mission statement to support sustainable water resources and a healthy environment. They're spot on. And what I'm going to share with you, I can appreciate. I chaired a commission like this for many years in another state, and this is kind of a curveball. But I think it's very, very important because it can be foundational for you in terms of where you need to go. A heads up, there's an initiative or an effort, not in terms of ballot initiative, but just an effort called Public Trust Water that is to engage the more youthful demographics of the state the millennials and the high school kids to get them more engaged in water issues to address a number of factors, which I won't get into right now. But it is a citizens' campaign, and it's to help develop a pedestrian language around the public trust doctrine and how it relates to water, a language that is not available to the citizenry of the state. It's been held pretty closely by the courts. And it's also to engage them in an understanding of the stake that they have in this trust asset called water. If we look at the condition of water now in this state, it's easy to conclude that we have greatly diminished this asset for future generations through over-appropriations, the degradation of groundwater resources, virtually every water body in the state in non-compliance with water quality standards, et cetera. So I want to move quickly to bond funding guidelines and how this might fit in for you, considerations for you. The public trust doctrine is cited only once in the draft guidelines as it is, and I find that unnecessarily limiting. Water is a public trust asset as codified by the state law and as articulated by the Supreme Court. And you as a government body are a trustee. You're one of a few state agents or bodies that have a trustee responsibility. As you allocate funding, you take on a trustee responsibility because that will impact the water resources of the state. And responsibility reaches far beyond just accounting. Your responsibilities include the necessary stewardship of the resource for future generations. Thus, we, the beneficiaries of the trust, have the legal right to expect you to steward those resources for now and the future. And you do that through your funding guidelines, your grant conditions, your reporting, your monitoring, and your enforcement to ensure those trust assets are protected. The compass, if you will, for you to consider has the 4 points. 1, the public right to clean and accessible water. 2, your duty to future generations. 3, your admonition against waste or harm. And 4, the needs of nature to sustain itself. Specific language considerations in the guidelines on ecosystem improvement, restoration of the ecosystem such that we regain healthy and sustainable stocks of native species. That's restoring the public trust asset. It will require certainty in water availability. If we're going to restore projects, we need to make sure that water will be there as those ecosystems require. Water quality changes, I think, fall short of a trust obligation. Sustainable water quality compliance would be the appropriate standard. Again, these aren't your obligations to achieve today, but if that is inherent in your granting and the language and the expectations and the performance requirements, you are driving towards that trust responsibility. And finally, with groundwater storage and contamination, the public benefits drive back to the restoration and protection of the public trust, the asset of groundwater. The overall project must prove substantive and sustainable net gains for the public trust. Public access to all monitoring and reporting must be a funding criterion. Otherwise, you can't report back to us, the beneficiaries, of what's being gained. And the long-term protections of the groundwater must be enforced. As you all know, the state has been more lax than any other Western state in terms of those resources. So to gain funding, the projects must demonstrate and quantify trust asset, water resource, gains, and protections. And again, I understand that your responsibility isn't to regulate necessarily, but you have a tremendous opportunity to drive the thinking behind where the money goes and have the obligations clear in terms of what your trustee responsibility is to the beneficiaries for now and for future generations. And we're lacking that in the state right now. I'll end it with that. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Haggerty. Questions? Okay, any more members of the public? I see one more person coming.
Chair Byrne and other commissioners, my name is Steve Rothard. I'm the California Director of American Rivers, a national nonprofit river conservation group. We have about 10,000 members and supporters here in California, and I'm the director of our California operations. A couple general comments and a couple specific recommendations I offer respectfully today. And first, thank you for serving in this role on this commission. It's a big job, and I appreciate the time and effort and sacrifices that you'll make in playing this role. Hopefully the stakeholder process in this round will be better than what sounds like the previous round was. In general, I echo some of the comments that were made by the previous speakers, and I would encourage the commission to further develop a shared information base that will inform your decisions, that is integrated, systematic, and to the extent possible, standardized. I was encouraged to hear that you'll be getting a presentation on TNC's report looking at storage options in California, and to the extent that you can have a shared understanding of what the opportunities are and the questions and uncertainties as a commission, I think that will greatly aid you in making your decisions down the road. I have three specific recommendations or questions that I think will help in further clarifying and making your guidelines more useful to you and to applicants. One question that I think needs some consideration and some thought relates to whether funds from Prop 1 can go to and support environmental mitigation or compliance. Section in Chapter 8, Section 79.753 says that no funds shall be used for mitigation or compliance unless it is for public benefits, which sounds to me to be a little bit inherently contradictory or circular, and I think it would be useful for the commission to think about this question, and even if you're required, if you interpret it to require you statutorily to allow funds to go to compliance and mitigation, perhaps those funds or those benefits don't share the same level of in the quantification of benefits that funds or projects that do not cover environmental compliance and mitigation might generate. Second, in determining the net public benefit, I think this will be a complicated process with lots of factors that you will be considering, and I think the definitions in the draft guidelines and regulations could be further expanded. One issue that I am thinking about, for example, is the definition of without project conditions. In that definition, there is something that is referred to as the most likely future conditions. How to determine what most likely future conditions, to me, sounds like a pretty complicated process. And to the extent that you can further clarify what you'll be looking at, what factors would be considered would be very important. For example, how will the commission account for plans on the books or requirements on the books for improved conditions of water quality or fish or habitat or recreation even? And lastly, the hydrologic period is defined as or specified as the historic hydrology. And, of course, CEQA requires an analysis of climate change effects and implications, and the applications will have to produce environmental documentation where that question will be addressed. But I would suggest that the commission might want to consider climate change issues in its deliberations and decisions, in addition to having it in what will probably be a pretty fat CEQA document buried in complex technical language. There are a number of other issues and questions that American Rivers and colleagues and partners will be developing and submitting to the commission later, but for now, thank you for the opportunity to share these, and thanks for your commitment to a transparent and public process. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your comments, Steve. Any other members of the public? Okay, thank you all very much for being patient and waiting and for your comments, and look forward to your participation as we continue into this process. With that, we'll move on to item number 10 on the agenda, which is a presentation by Mr. Quinn, who's the head of AQUA, with regards to an update on their efforts and group that they've formed in order to participate in this process as well.
Thank you very much, Chairman Byrne, members of the Commission. I'm now officially between these people and lunch, so I'll be as brief as I can and be glad to answer any questions that you've got. My name is Tim Quinn. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of California Water Agencies, and I'm here primarily to report on the activities of the AQUA Water Storage Policy Task Force, which was created to give the best input we can give you as you go through your open, transparent process. If you're wondering, well, what we're up to, I think probably right now the best thing to do is to look at recent efforts. As in my tenure as executive director, whenever we're facing a really important or a really controversial, usually both, issue, I have asked the board of directors to form a task force or a work group or a group of experts that reports directly to the AQUA board to give them advice for how they should try and chart difficult waters. And that's what we're doing here. In the last few years, we had a finance task force that was the first to suggest how to downsize the bond. And if you look at the resulting bond, they were pretty close to the mark in early 2013. Later that year, we had a process to develop what we call a statewide water action plan, which was, you know, trying to get the administration to look broader than the Delta for their water plan, and I think that was influential in the development of the administration's California Water Action Plan. And most recently, and maybe most profoundly, was Mr. Worth can tell you a few war stories about the Groundwater Sustainability Task Force, which came out with very detailed recommendations for legislation last year. And while that legislation remains controversial, it was pretty close to the template that the AQUA group laid out. So I'm not saying we can tell you how to do your job, but we can try and collect from a very diverse membership our guidance from what our perspective you ought to be accounting for as you do your the awesome job that's before you. By the way, I meant to start by congratulating all of us on the passage of the water bond. It's sort of become, oh, yeah, that thing. 7 years hard work. You now have some important work to do in how to spend wisely for co-equal goals, about a third of the total money that was approved by 67% of California voters. Our process here has been pretty typically AQUA process. The President John Coleman asked the board in September to create this task force, which the board did. The membership of this task force is not typically board members. It is experts from around all from all parts of the state of California on water management and storage in particular, and they have met several times. They've met several times, and they're in mid. We're in mid-process right now, and I want to emphasize, I'm going to give you my sense of where we are headed, but nothing I'm going to say is intended to constrain where that task force or my board goes, but I will try and give you sort of a heads up as to what I think is going to come out of it. We're hoping for a final report to the AQUA board in March. We will be sharing that with you and other people in this room in draft form and in final form when we get there. So here's my assessment of where we're going to wind up. We are the statewide association. We will take a statewide look at storage and its requirements. We have all 10 AQUA regions represented in our process. Every one of them reports that additional storage investments is, in their view, critical for their water supply reliability and taking care of their local ecosystem or the big ecosystem up in the Bay Delta watershed. Storage is a universal requirement in California, and we will have a report that tries to paint a picture of how storage is very broadly required for better water management in the 21st century, how it differs from one region to another, and we will take a broad statewide perspective. Not all of those projects will necessarily be able to compete or meet the criteria for Chapter 8 of Proposition 1. But as AQUA, we want to make sure all of our membership are at the storage table so that they can communicate their needs. And then there will be other provisions of law, other pots of money that we will seek for those members who can't realistically compete for the types of dollars that you're going to be in charge of. So for those, most of that storage will, in fact, have something to do with the broader status of the Bay Delta watershed, and we'll have a shot at meeting, much of that storage will have a shot at meeting the requirements under which you're to allocate the funds under Chapter 8, Project 1. And for those, again, this is preliminary, subject to change. I've got 7 bits of advice for you, which agree with some of what I've heard in the last hour and disagree with some of what I've heard in the last hour. The first bit of advice is to create a vision. It's not, in my ear, not different from what Barry Nelson was telling you. Don't do simply project-by-project allocation of the dollars. You should have an umbrella vision about what storage needs to do in California to accomplish the public purposes that are set forth in Chapter 8. And you should have that umbrella in mind as you are allocating dollars to one project or another. A second, again, I understand that Mark Cowan made a pitch for integration. It's very clear to us that you should be encouraging, even requiring integration as you award dollars for storage projects. It's not enough that a project do something for the local area where it's to be constructed. It has to be integrated into other new projects, into existing infrastructure, and especially into groundwater basins from our perspective. Our storage efforts and our groundwater efforts, I'm expecting, are going to merge in the next few months. But that kind of integration, making sure that project, that's different. It's hard, by the way. Integration is really hard. You have to separate out institutional boundaries that have grown up for a century. But one thing that makes my folks work around those boundaries is you folks allocating dollars, and I would encourage you to think about encouraging integration as you're going through your process. A third recommendation or bit of advice is to leverage your dollars. The voters approve something that says you can provide up to 50%. We would encourage you to encourage applicants not to ask for the full 50%. Ask for less. That way you can leverage your $2.7 billion into more than $5.4 billion. I don't know exactly how far you can go with that, but quite frankly, I don't think storage happens the way it needs to happen in California unless water users and others come to realize it really is a part of their part of their future. That out there in 2040, when you have to demonstrate that you have sustainable groundwater conditions under the groundwater law, we think you're absolutely going to need new storage and other system assets in place, and we need an industry that's ready to get out its checkbook and pay for that. So if we can get there, and that's part of the goal that we have for this task force process, we would encourage you to think about leveraging for more dollars, not for less. I'm going to do bits of advice 4 and 5 together. 4 is do support financially CalFed projects that are able to successfully compete. Look, those projects have been through 20 years of process. I know they're controversial. Lots of things that need to happen to make California work are controversial. But they're meritorious projects. We believe that they will compete effectively, and we don't think that you should shy away from them because others can create controversy around them. At the same time, you should support other types of projects, too. I will virtually guarantee that when Aqua is done, the CalFed surface storage projects will not be the only projects that we think need to move forward to promote the concept of co-equal goals. And again, it ties in with some of my previous advice that we think you need to be prepared to fund both types of projects. I'm sure you're hearing, like I'm hearing, some people come up and say the legislation really was designed only for a couple of the CalFed storage projects. Other came up and said they'll never get built, give all the money to L.A. or someplace else. In fact, I think you need to use your wisdom to come up with an integrated approach that realizes all those types of projects are, in fact, worthy and need to move forward. Bit of advice number 6, reserve your authority. This goes to some of the comments that Jay was making. I agree with some of it and want to urge caution with others. You need expert advice on how you do some of these economic evaluations. If you don't go through a reasoned process, then you're going to create vulnerabilities for projects you give money to. They're going to be under attack by some. Did they create a substantial benefit for the Bay Delta watershed? Did they meet the 50% criteria that was written into the law? Even though there were economists like myself sitting at those tables and said, well, how the heck are they going to do that? You need some professional advice, particularly on the evaluation questions. Our judgment is that the closer your experts get to telling you how to weight one project to the other, the more skeptical you should become. That's your job. There's going to be tough decisions to be made, and you are the representatives of the public that are charged with making that job. So I would not ask your experts to tell you which projects are best. I'd ask them to give you expert advice on valuation, on evaluating the properties of those projects, and you're going to have to reserve to yourself the difficult process of going through which project exactly ought to warrant funding. And then a bit of advice number seven is consistent with others, maintain an open and transparent process. We're going to do everything we can to try and present you with organized, thoughtful comments from the water community. We can be pretty cacophonic sometimes, and Aqua has proven, I think, fairly useful to channel all of our diversity into a set of useful policy suggestions for boards such as yours. We're going to be doing that. Hope to have a final report in March that we will report on in April, and I'd be glad to answer any questions or listen to any comments. Yes, sir.
Mr. Curtin, yeah, please.
You mentioned you were combining 4 and 5. You got the CalPED part. 5, the non-CalPED part?
Yeah. And in point of fact, when my members in Southern California say, can I compete for some of this money, my answer to them is yes. You could logically compete for some of this money. But read the act. Read the law. Make sure that you're going to be able to show that you improve the operations of the statewide water system and that you're going to provide a substantial benefit to the Bay Delta ecosystem. They can in principle, but they've got to change how they think and how they operate. And I think you'll get some. I think you're going to get some projects competing. And what we mean by 4 and 5 is divide the money up between the two types of projects because we think you're going to need more. I'm not ready to tell you what percentages. I may never be ready to tell you what percentages, but it's clear to us that you need both.
We're going to listen. Hmm? I said the closer you get to that, the less we're going to listen.
That's right. And by the way, I don't see the Aqua process as recommending specific projects. That's not our job. We're going to try and create a context in which what our members collectively believe is good policy can come out if you pay attention to it, and then it's up to you to go to the specific projects.
Commissioner Saracino.
Thanks, Tim. I'm glad to hear Aqua's not going to recommend specific projects. I think one of the most important things you said was how difficult the integration piece is going to be. Mm-hmm. We're going to grapple with that probably more than any other thing, and I'm wondering whether or not Aqua is going to make recommendations along those lines. For example, I think we all believe the groundwater projects will be important as this, Southern California, Central Valley, wherever. Does that mean that a Southern California groundwater project has to look at integrating its operations with the entire statewide project, Shasta Reservoir, in order to be considered, or can you have standalone groundwater projects that meet all the requirements of the Act, provide public benefits, ecosystem benefits? Where do you draw that line, and how best do you analyze various projects, both among themselves, integrated with other projects, integrated with future projects, integrated with the state system, the federal system? This is going to be a tough thing to get our head around, and I'm wondering if you're planning on providing more specific recommendations along those
lines. We're going to take a pretty hard look at it. Again, the integration is awfully important to the group of people meeting, talking about what the future of storage is, and they fully recognize how hard it is. With your specific example, my intuition, and it's just Tim Quinn's intuition, is, you know, the closer you're out to the end of a spoke in our system, the less the burden of system-wide integration is going to be on you. So I'm not sure that all the integration really needs to happen for a project that's in a distant groundwater basin. The closer you are to the hub of the system, some of the main surface storage systems, which will and we believe should convey, integration is real important, I would argue, for those projects. And if I'm you, I want to ask about how they're going to integrate into the state and federal system, how are they going to integrate into groundwater systems, what institutional arrangements are going to make all that workable. So in some cases, I think it's likely to be a bigger deal than others, and we are going to wrestle with that and give you the best advice we can. Quite frankly, that kind of integration is remarkably different from what we did a half century ago. We've been moving in that direction for 25 years, I would argue. We've been taking steps towards more integrated operation of the system. We've got a long way to go, and we're still going to be working on it 20 years from now. But I think you, the money that you've got to allocate can, you know, sometimes it's continuous progress. You can force us to take a big jump on how we integrate by thoughtfully making that a criteria in how you allocate dollars.
Commissioner Dobosky, yeah, and then,
sorry, as a follow-up, that was my point, my first comment today about having money to spend, by the way, to our two fiscal conservatives are going to take a close look at this, that we really need to do those kinds of analysis to evaluate system integration, and that's not an easy thing to do. It's going to require a robust effort.
Commissioner Dobosky, and then Commissioner Curtin.
Yeah, Tim, thank you for that and for your recommendations and suggestions. I know that you were pretty intimately involved in crafting or working with the legislature in crafting this legislation, and I was wondering if you could give us a little insight of what our legislators' vision was for this, or did they just say, write this and throw it out to the commission and let them figure it out?
Well, I'll take a cut at that, but yeah, I'm not elected to office. I was up to my eyeballs in it. My impression at the time was that they were, in fact, calling for an integrated set of projects. I mean, if you read it, it doesn't say all this or all that. It calls for integration. But it was also clearly designed to move towards a type of storage that had been very difficult to build politically in California. I mean, there was a general recognition that there was a need for surface storage in the main stem of the system to help operate the system for critical goals. So again, I don't read the legislation to have stopped with that kind of project, but it was clearly designed to energize that kind of project, but I think within an integrated set that accomplishing critical goals on the whole. I'm sure you can find others that will disagree with that, but as I was sitting there, you know, at those negotiating tables, working through words for a long, long time, that was a thought process in my mind.
Thank you.
Mr. Curtin.
I want to add to the idea of reliability as well as integration, because they are similar but different, and I think it does get to the question you were asking and your response, Tim, which was, the further out you are on the spoke, integration may not be the ultimate idea, but reliability becomes very critical. Mm-hmm. And I would add to that, reliability is also important in the systems, the watersheds that supply the water. And I think there's going to be some work needs to be done from this commission about storage of natural infrastructure. Maybe we can look into that. So those are the issues that I'm looking forward to really discussing, flexibility for the system, integration, reliability. So that leads me – I didn't raise the question because we've got a busy agenda, but the whole idea of ranking projects gets me a little nervous. I think we have to rank them in some respects, but not – I mean, if we're having them ranked such that you could just put them into a computer and the computer could spit out, okay, these are your highest-ranked projects, you know, we may as well go home. And I don't think that's the intent. But I just wanted to put that on the table. Lastly, there's already mission creep going on. My idea, Kim, for financial review was more about expending the administration-type money. But if you want us to review all the finances for all the projects, we'll probably be able to handle that, too.
If I might suggest, rather than taking all of your projects and trying to rank them, which I believe is impossible,
exactly,
that you substitute for that this broader vision. I mean, what do we need out of storage where for co-equal goals? I mean, some places it might mean you need a surface storage project to pulse water into a groundwater basin, shifting demands from dry to wet periods, which meets the test legislation for the watershed, but is also consistent with groundwater sustainability in parts of California.
So
another project might be temperature and flow in a particular place for salmon species at a particular time of year. They both might be important to your vision for co-equal goals, but I don't know how you would possibly rank one versus the other.
Well, I think that sounds good. However, the likelihood is that we're probably going to get requests for more money than is available. And so we're going to have some criteria to ensure that they not only meet a threshold, but then to prioritize.
I wasn't suggesting you could avoid prioritization. I just said I think you want to be careful about how you approach it.
Okay, fair enough.
By the way, just one other comment on integration, which might surprise some of the previous speakers, but one of the things you need to integrate is your demand, your local resource development projects with your storage projects. I mean, that's the little-known secret of Southern California is they invested in demand management and storage at the same time and operated them together to find a way to get along with the environmental demands being made on them. I think that's a powerful lesson which we intend to try and put a spotlight on and that you might want to think about. Do you want to store the big spikes of water? Of course you do. But you can also integrate your storage programs with other parts of your integrated resources programs to the benefit of the environment and water supply reliability jointly. And that's something else I think you should be learning about and thinking about as these projects move forward.
Thank you very much, Tim. And I would say it's our task, and I would actually look at Sue and Ajay and others. I think the integration piece is key, and I think it's also for us figuring out how we can best educate ourselves as to that outside of the context of just it being a specific application by application. So however we incorporate that into our process, whether it be recommendations from all the stakeholders and also input and thoughts from our own staff as well, And that, I think, maybe includes a little bit of, I think we all understand the system pretty well, but understanding it even better will make us more informed. So anyway, as always, thank you for coming, Tim. Appreciate you taking the time. And
working closely with Sue and the rest of you.
Great. Thank you very much.
At least for a while.
Yeah, week.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I think we'll take a break for lunch.
Can I make just one comment
sure,
before we go?
Sure, Mr. Curtin.
I don't know what's on the afternoon agenda, but I really want to thank the staff for the enormous amount of work they've put into just getting this complex process rolling. We've been skating kind of interestingly and having great discussions. Now it's time to narrow them down and focus them. You guys have done a great job. Thank you for the presentations and the public input as well, but I did want to make a point of that. It's an enormous amount of staff work that was put out right after the bond was done. It's like all of a sudden somebody opened up the box and here it came. So congratulations to all of you and
thanks.
Wish you well.
I agree, Mr. Curtin.
I did want to get one point clarified to help us. A lot of the information you've asked to bring back and to be able to review and provide some input, the one thing that we had planned to proceed with, but I want to make sure that's okay or see if you want us to hold off on that too, is this the scoping survey that we would send out to agencies to start to get a feel for what kinds of projects, who thinks they might be eligible, who would want to participate in this process, and if you would rather us not proceed with sending that out until there's been some additional review, we can do that. Otherwise, we probably would go ahead and send that out within the next week or so probably and begin getting in some of that information to help inform some of these other processes. So I'll look to you for your desire on that.
Commissioner Delfino, do you have any other?
My recommendation would be to go ahead and do that sooner rather than later. And if we need refinements later on, we could always ask for clarification.
Great. Thank you very much.
And I would also ask that those materials be sent to us simultaneously when you send them out so we see what everybody's getting.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay, great. We'll adjourn until it is 12:23. We'll come back about 1:10.